Hey guys, this is Cliff Simon from Stargate SG-1, better known as Baal. And welcome to Traveling the Vortex, and I'm going to step through the gate now, but have a good time. Good to talk to you all. Have fun. Goodbye. Mwah!
Traveling the Vortex.
So fill up your glasses and join in the song. The law's right behind you and it won't take long. So come, you coyotes, and howl at the moon.
We've joined the Doctor as he travels the Vortex and landed at episode number 90. And I see keep out signs and suggestions more than actual orders, like dry clean only. Unless it's the Last Chance Saloon. I'm Keith.
I am El Presidente.
How are you guys?
Very good. How are you?
I'm good.
Are you discombobulated because we're in our new studio?
A little bit. It's a little strange being in...
We're oriented in the same spot.
We're oriented in the same spot. I had to very carefully make sure that I'm... This was, and he wanted to argue
no,
with
we
me.
We were very careful to make sure you were where you were supposed to be.
I had to have my Sheldon
so
chair.
So as not
this
to throw things off, you know.
But yeah, I have a window now I can look out of, which is kind of nice.
Yeah.
It's dark out. Can't see anything.
It's weird being this far from a window.
Yeah, that's
we've
true.
We've always been near... Even in your old studio.
Yes, we were right next to a window.
Yeah. So...
But we are next to a giant, gorgeous bookshelf.
Keith's touting his new bookshelf.
I just got this bookshelf today.
$50.
For $50,
goes
real
all
wood.
The way to the ceiling.
You should put this on
it
the YouTube
goes
channel.
All the way to the ceiling. It's 93
seven.
Inches tall.
Seven
shelves. Yep. The ceiling is 95.
Put this on the YouTube channel.
You might. It's
now
almost,
you can see all the books I have.
It's almost tall enough you would have had to cut a hole in the neighbor's floor.
Yes. I was really worried that when we stood it upright, it was just going to scrape the ceiling and all the little dimple stuff.
All the popcorn
stuff
was gonna come off the ceiling.
But it didn't. And it was lightweight. And it's just perfect. And
it's a very cool bookcase.
I love it. As Sarah would attest... I have been obsessing about this bookcase, about getting a bookcase since we moved into this apartment.
Here's the new studio. And
all the pictures of me suck.
We have a couple of boxes left.
We've seen Keith's place. We've seen Sean's place.
Yeah, but you've only shown off his DVDs.
I showed off the room.
Oh, you did? I don't remember that.
Yeah.
Was it on the YouTube channel?
Yes.
Really? I missed that one.
I think so.
I must have missed that.
Maybe I didn't put that one up. All right. Signing off the YouTube channel.
We should, okay. Bye.
Bye.
We should have a link to... get you in there. We should have a link to the YouTube channel on the website, because I don't think there is one.
No,
yeah,
I think
that's
you're
a
right.
Good point.
It's all right. We just posted the video on the
website.
Yeah, and then people can watch them there anyway. YouTube's just a placeholder for all of us. How was you guys' this weekend?
It was good.
It was awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It was a great weekend.
You guys should talk about your weekend because I didn't do anything. Really.
Well, you should start with yours then because you did
I
at least one thing.
What did I do?
Well, the kids. Didn't you go to a reunion?
We didn't. That's what that.
Oh,
no,
oh,
that's
you
the,
didn't.
No,
okay.
That's the sad thing
See,
about
I didn't
this
hear
whole
this
thing.
Part of this
no.
story.
Yeah, I missed
yeah.
that.
Well, we waited around and waited around for some people to tell us where they were going to be and what was going on, and then it took way too long, and it was like half the day was over, and that was part of the reason I didn't go to the con, was because if I'd have known that everybody was going to be wishy-washy about this, I'd have just gone to Kansas City and gone to the con, and I'd gone in the morning. But by about 1 o'clock, when we finally found out what was going on, where it was, and they were getting ready to go to eat in a half hour, and we still were an hour away, we were like,
really?
You know what? Forget it. We're not going. So that's why about the time you paged me at, or texted me. It must have been about noon or 12:30.
That was when we were about to leave.
Yeah, then I was like, no, I'm not. Probably not going to make it.
Because we were going to leave you the press pass
the press
we had.
Pass, yeah.
So.
No. So, no biggie. So anyway, I was pretty bummed. But last night we watched our second Disney movie of our preparing for our Disney trip. So that was a lot of fun.
I saw you, posted Lady and the Tramp, and you had spaghetti.
We did. We went to...
Which is an awesome idea.
We went
really
to Olive Garden.
I think it's really cool.
And did that, and then came home and watched Lady and the Tramp, and Holly had bought these dog bowls, these cheap dog bowls from the dollar store, and put cookies in each one of them.
So that's
the
really
kids
cool.
Ate cookies out of a dog bowl. So that was a lot of fun. So, what did you guys do this week?
We got up Saturday morning and drove up to Kansas City for Con X. pop culture convention. You can't call it a comic book convention because there was no comic book vendor.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. No comic books.
It's a first year con. It had pretty good selection and a large number of guests, including Walter Koenig, Denise Crosby, Bob Gunton, who, for those who may not recognize the name, was in Next Gen, Star Trek Next Gen. He was the warden in Shawshank. Sean, what else was he in? There was something else.
He was in one of the doctors in Patch Adams.
Yes.
I mean, he's one of those guys that as soon as you see him...
It's that guy.
He's a very good character actor.
But for me, the big claim to fame, even beyond Star Trek, is, you know, the warden from the Shawshank Redemption. Yeah. That's kind of it.
There was also...
Who else was there?
We had Cliff Simon, Jay Avicone, and Alexis Cruz, all from Stargate and Stargate SG-1. And yes, James Tolkien, Strickland from Back to the Future, along with other movies.
He was in Top Gun. He was in Masters of the Universe. Another big character actor in my
mind.
Was
he in Masters of the Universe?
Yeah, he played. He's another high school teacher, I think, in that one. He gets brought over into the alternate universe and he decides to stay.
Right. That's right. I forgot that's who that was.
Yeah.
Yeah. James Tolkien.
Erica Laniak was there from Baywatch and Under Siege.
Tom Kane was there.
Tom Kane, voice of Yoda.
Well, he lives in Kansas City, though. So.
He does?
We're pretty sure we parked next to his car because there was a Corvette, a very nice-looking Corvette in the parking lot with Citizen Kane on the license plate. I was like, that's got to be Tom's
very
car.
Cool. So he lives in Kansas City, or he's from Kansas City.
As well as Eileen Dietz.
From The Exorcist.
And apparently the Planet of the Apes TV show.
And she remembered
us. Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
She did we from went, being, we, when we, she was
we,
here
we
for
we
Slash
went
out
to
Mesh.
Say hi to her, and we said, you don't remember. She goes, from Topeka, right?
Wow. Whoa.
I mean, just right off the cuff. Very nice woman. Eileen Dietz is wonderful.
You're a very memorable guy, though, Sean.
Yeah. We won't go into that weekend.
There are also a couple of guests from Paranormal Activity. Not the main actors, but Ashley Palmer, Amber Armstrong, and Mark Fredericks. I couldn't tell you who they played in the movie. But also Bill Blair, who was also in Star Trek, and is going to be guest starring. He stopped me because of my costume. I was in doctor costume. And he was like, you're dressed as a doctor, aren't you? I'm like, yep. And he's like, that's very cool. And then mentioned to me that he's in an upcoming episode of Community.
Well,
where they go to a convention that spoofs Doctor Who, so I'm assuming it's an Inspector Spacetime convention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so Bill Blair is going to be in that episode.
Oh, very cool.
They had a very, Margot Kidder was supposed to have gone, which is the one you were real excited mm-hmm. about initially.
Right. And Kevin J. O'Connor.
And Kevin J. O'Connor, who played Benny in The Mummy.
Yes,
also supposed to have been there, and he had to cancel due to work commitments. But none of these people are big names. I was excited over James Tolkien and
I think Walter is the biggest name they really had. Most people would recognize.
Crosby probably.
Those two are the two biggest.
I forgot she was in Pet Sematary too.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and she was very nice.
Oh, Denise! Yeah,
yeah,
Denise
was really friendly.
And that was the beauty of this con was that it was a small con, but it was really, I thought, kind of the perfect size for the first year for them starting off, and the fact that they didn't have a huge media icon to worry about. It was very laid back. It was very intimate. You could just kind of walk around and talk to people, and there weren't lines for the most part for anything or anybody. Everybody was very friendly, and seemed genuinely happy to be here and had a good time, it looked like. Apparently Friday night, I knew a couple people that were helping to organize, and Friday night they mentioned that they actually brought out a birthday cake and sang happy birthday to Walter Koenig.
Oh, cool.
Because his birthday was it Friday? Was it actually
Friday?
Birthday was actually Friday. And so he had a blast with that. And they had
It was September 14th.
They apparently had someone cosplaying as Marilyn Monroe who came out and sang to him. Left a big old bright red lipstick print on his forehead and stuff. So they had a good time with it. And they had the DeLorean from Back to the Future. They had
which
a car
was very cool.
Mock-up for that. They had a General Lee from the Dukes of Hazzard, a couple of Knight Riders kits, and Road Warrior. not so great Ghostbusters car and some other things. But I mean, it was a nice convention, and our thanks go out to Marla, who kind of gave us the hookup and getting us out there. And we told her that we would very much, promote this for next year. I hope there is one next year, because they put on, I thought, a very good show.
Yeah, they really did. It was very nice and intimate. We both bumped into Matt from the Slugcast, who mm-hmm. we met mm-hmm. at Planet Comic Con, so right. I got to chat with him for a little bit, so
good.
Hello to him.
Hello, Matt.
And really, I thought the vendors, there weren't a lot of vendors, but the vendors they had quality stuff.
Yeah, because a lot of times you go to the smaller conventions and you kind of go, okay. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, they brought in some good stuff. And a lot of it was stuff that we don't find here. I mean, we've talked before about finding Doctor Who merchandise.
There were a couple of good recognition of Doctor Who merchandise.
Well, clearly. Talk about the piece that you got.
I picked up a canine bobblehead, which I already tweeted out the picture. So go to my Twitter account. And the... I've seen this online.
It's just, heavy duty too. I mean,
yeah,
I've seen this online and seen
the image from the box and was so worried that I thought it was cool, but I thought it was going to be bobblehead with its canine with the giant's head, because mm-hmm. that's the way the box looks.
Well, and that's typical.
And that's traditional.
That's a typical bobblehead. Yeah, with the large oversized head. I love that this is in scale.
Yeah, me too. And we went ahead and got it thinking, okay, it's a canine bobblehead. We have to have it anyways.
Right. Whether it was the caricature-looking one or not.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, we're here. It's in front of us. We're going to pick it up.
Remember, you're not supposed to wander.
Yeah, I'm not supposed to get up. Did that come out of the wall?
No, you're okay. Nope, you're actually, go ahead and tweak it a little bit. There you go.
Okay.
I really felt like I pulled it out somewhere, but it's still on the computer, too.
No, it's you're in. You just... Yeah, I gave you enough slack.
Yeah, you did.
Glenn's tripping over cords in the studio here. So.
there's an adjustment period. But it doesn't have a big head, and so it's fantastic to see that. It's very heavy duty. It's high quality, I think. And there were two booths that had the canine bobblehead.
Oh yeah.
And the other one had a TARDIS. One of them had a Both of them had a TARDIS bobblehead, and the TARDIS bobbles on the base.
We discussed the inaccuracy of calling the TARDIS bobblehead a bobblehead because it has no head to bobble. It's just the TARDIS on a spring going boing, 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 boing. Yeah. It's like...
Something like bubble flight TARDIS.
Yeah. And after we purchased the canine, apparently the guy we got it from, that was his last one, so he put a Tom Baker.
There was a Tom Baker bobblehead?
Yes.
Oh, I wish I'd gone.
You should have come.
How much was it? Was it 30? Oh, look at that.
I didn't look at the price. I'm assuming both of... This is all the bobbleheads. This was 20, so I'm assuming it was the same price. But some of them... The guy we got this from had a nice variety of really cool t-shirts.
You got his business card, didn't you?
Yes.
Well, maybe if you're nice, he'll pass the information on to you. You can order
it. That's very cool.
He had a nice variety of t-shirts. He had a good selection of action figures. And then the other place that had the bobblehead where Sean picked up his toy. Okay, replica.
We'll talk about that in a minute.
Yes. Had a... Quite a bit of Doctor Who stuff.
Not a doll. It's an action figure.
They even had a... There's like two lines of toys now. The rebranding since Matt Smith took over toys, and then the ones before it, which those are always a little bit more expensive. And I was so tempted because they had the Cyber Leader and his little throne thing the previous run. But it was like $46. And I was like, one figure, I can't justify that. But impressive.
It's a deluxe figure, though.
Yeah, it's a deluxe. Room,
but still, $50 for...
But they also had a pretty good recognition of... Mel picked up a Doctor Who shot glass, a tall shot glass, along with a Stargate one, and a couple other Doctor Who-related items, and... Just a nice variety.
There was a really, really good selection of stuff.
There was costumers, a big costumer booth. They had a steampunk booth, one artist.
Ghost tours.
Ghost tours.
A DJ.
Yeah. It was...
They had a DJ?
Well, they have like an MC type tunes? Guy.
Yeah, he's a. I feel bad now. He's somewhere on the guest page. He's like a horror DJ. Apparently, he talks like he actually sounded to me a lot like Marcus on Borderlands. He had the accent, and he would come on and do the "We're going to go down here and do the thing," and you know, he kind of had that gruff thing. But he was I don't know, like Dracula had a talk show.
It's
kind of.
It's not on the.
He's an entertainer of some sort, but I'm not familiar enough with the horror elements to be able to tell you. But like I said, I mean, I thought they did a very good job with putting it together. It was
sounds a little more like I can't remember the count's name on SCTV.
It was kind of Joe Flaherty.
Floyd.
Count Floyd.
Yeah, Joe Flaherty played, and you're right.
And like I said, I thought it was a good sized con. They did a lot of things right. Which was refreshing, because that's the other thing you kind of worry about going into a first time.
It reminded me a lot of a smaller version of Contagion in Omaha. Hmm. Like, if they hadn't have brought in the semi Transformer and a couple of the other cars, this is what Contagion would have been. Contagion maybe had a bit more artists, but...
But definitely, I would give them a shout out and say, you know, if you're going to be in the Kansas City area, hopefully they'll do another one next year in September, and we'll post a link on the website so that you can kind of check it out, and you can like them on Facebook and do all that kind of stuff.
And they did a lot of charity stuff, too.
They did a lot of charity stuff for Wounded Warrior Project, and
which is always cool to see.
This was kind of the thing that I thought was interesting is the con apparently ran all weekend.
Yeah. It was like Friday, Saturday,
Well, it was
Sunday.
Not only the Friday, Saturday, Sunday, but if you noticed the ballroom where they had the panels.
It was 24 hours.
Overnight, they were showing movies in there.
Oh, cool.
Which because, was, you know.
12 midnight on Friday, they had a screening of Coffin. And then like 2:30, 4, 5, 30,
yeah, I mean, just
7:30.
Kind of all the way through until they needed the room for panels again. So, that's kind of a cool way of doing it.
It was literally 24-hour.
You know,
that's neat.
Because you know, when I go to a convention, I don't want sleep.
No, absolutely. Especially which is what I wish Galley would do.
It's so at a
you
hotel.
Just could have things all night long if you wanted to.
Maybe they will.
24 hours of Galley.
I have to tell the story. So we go to talk to James Tolkien because I went for three specific autographs. I had to get myself a Bob Gunton, who is the nicest guy in the world. He's exactly what you would think of. When he's not being the warden, he just looks like he's a nice guy. He is. He's the nicest. He's just a sweet.
When he's not being an evil warden.
When he's not being an evil guy, he's a very mild-mannered, you know, and he was just kind of sitting at his table and very, you know, very pleasant, very pleasurable experience to meet him. So I went and got his autograph. I had to have James Tolkien. I mean, the guy was in Back to the Future. I had to have Tolkien's autograph. That was just a Tolkien. Had to do it. And then I went and got Denise Crosby because I have a next-gen picture that I'm working on and accumulating autographs, and I didn't have hers yet. So those were kind of the three on my list. Mel wanted the SG-1 crew, so we went and talked to them as well, and you didn't wind up with any autographs.
Well, we didn't get
you?
An autograph. We got, we got a Walter autograph for Sarah's mom, and I was tempted by James, and I was also tempted by Camden Troy, I think was his name.
Oh, the horror movie monster guy?
Yeah, he was in Buffy. So I was kind of, but under makeup. So it was like, and I just didn't like any of the pictures he had out.
Well,
so.
And we feel bad because, like, when what's his name, Boba Fett,
Jeremy Bullock
came to Kansas City. I kind of feel bad when you walk up and you stand in line for Jeremy Bullock, and you get up to the line, and it's like, "Hi, can I sign something for you?" And you go, "Yeah, I want the picture with the bucket on your head."
Yeah,
because it could be anybody in there, and I feel bad doing that to some of these guys that play the monsters and Chewbacca or Peter Mayhew or whatever.
This guy has very recognizable characters from the show and very tight prosthetics.
Yeah, but I mean, it's kind of the same thing with
Bill Blair.
Bill Blair, who's played like every Borg ever in Next Gen. It's kind of like he would just be so plastered
and
on with
Patrick
all
Barnett
the prosthesis,
too. Yeah.
Prosthesis with the prosthetics that, you know, they're irrecognizable. But anyway, so we go up to James Tolkien and I'm talking with him a minute. And he looks at Keith, who's cosplaying as the 11th Doctor. And you were the only 11th. You were the only Doctor who cosplayed, period.
Yeah. There wasn't that many cosplays. Like some of the handlers for the celebrities were kind of dressed a little funky, not costume. There were a couple predators.
Dressed or smelled?
Dressed.
Oh, dressed. Okay. I didn't have a poor fan experience at this one. Okay, you know, every now and then you get that, oh, wow, really? There wasn't...
All right. There were fan funk.
There were
fan
a couple funk. Of Predators and, of course, the 501st.
Oh, the Predator guy was awesome.
Both of them were really impressive.
There were two really, really good-looking Predators, and they had the full-blown helmet on. And he's standing there, and there was a little girl, and he kind of kept... And she was just eyeballing him, like she was not ready to go near this guy. And he'd reach out for her, and she'd shrink back. And he'd put his arm down, and she'd kind of lean forward again. And he'd bring his arm up, and she'd shrink back. And they get through this the whole time. And somebody said, well, maybe it's the helmet. Maybe the helmet's scaring her. Can you take the helmet off? And he kind of looked at them for a minute, and he reached out, of course, with the big, long fingers in the Predator hand. And he grabbed the helmet and pulled the helmet off, and he had the Predator mask on underneath the helmet. I was like, oh, this isn't going to end well. And she looked at him and was just staring. And the mother was standing there next to us, and she's like, if his mouth opens up, she's just going to lose it. She's not going to be able to handle this. But
the mouth open?
We didn't see it open, but it was an amazing cut. But like I said, he had the motion down and everything. He just pulled that helmet off, that faceplate, and everything was...
It was very impressive.
It was really cool. But we're standing there talking to James Tolkien, and he looks at Keith, and he says, and he's got that distinctive, you know, you're a slacker. He's got that voice. And he looks at Keith.
He's got that principal voice still.
He's still. Dude hasn't changed at all.
You're cool, but I'm intimidated
he's
by
older,
you.
He's older, but that's it.
Yes, sir. No, sir.
He just looked at Keith. He goes, I have to ask, are you a nerd or are you just dressed like one?
And so my response is, both.
We didn't realize it till afterwards.
I forgot because he's talking to me and it's just instantly.
Everybody straightens up a little bit. And, you
know. Later, under my shirt, because I wore a shirt underneath my costume shirt so I could change easier.
Sure.
After the fact, because we were going to go do other stuff. And I was wearing my Revenge of the Nerd shirt that says nerd. And booger on the back. So I should have opened it up and been like, yes. Yes, I am.
Big old Superman moment with Sam. It didn't occur to us until afterwards that the 11th Doctor outfit is pretty much the exact same wardrobe he wore in Back to the Future.
Yeah, yeah.
That's, I mean, that he has
close.
The bow tie. And the,
right.
I mean, that's it.
I thought the same thing. In fact, I thought you were going to say, did James Tolkien think you dressed as him?
If I had shaved my head, maybe.
So he was a lot of fun to talk to. And then, of course, Mel squeed all over herself getting to meet the three Stargate actors, including Cliff Simon. Now, Cliff Simon, for those of you that don't watch SG-1, yes, I'll do a side trip on that at some point. But Cliff Simon plays one of the bad guys. He's Lord Ball. He's one of the Gold System Lords. And he's from South Africa, and he's got a wonderful accent. And he's just a commanding presence on screen. Well, before the con we had seen he was on Twitter, so we started following him, and you know, I was back and forth, and somebody immediately, as soon as I jumped on and started following him, I saw a tweet from somebody else that said, who does a guy have to talk to Cliff Simon on Doctor Who? And I'm like, oh yeah, he'd be awesome on this show. I mean, he'd be great. So I asked him about it, and I was like, so I hear that there's, you know, some movement to try and get you on Who. And he goes, there's a huge movement to get out. He says, these people came out of the woodwork and just started inundating me and Stephen Moffat. Hey, who do we need to go? Can we get you down and talk to who? And I'm like, so is there interest there? I mean, to you, is it just a paycheck that, yeah, I'd be excited to do it? Or is there, he says, oh, I love the show. He says, I've been following it since the early days and, you know, ever since the revamp. He says, yeah, I'd do it in a heartbeat. And I said, okay, so you get the opportunity. Do you have any interest in, you know, would you want to come in and be the guy that comes in to help out? Or do you want to play the villain? He goes, the villain? He says, are you kidding? With my voice, I have to be the bad guy. So, Stephen Moffat, we know you listen. We'd really like to see Cliff Simon show up as
absolutely.
A villain in Doctor Who. He'd be phenomenal. But good stories all around. It was a lot of fun.
It was
fun,
a great
day.
Con. I highly recommend it.
And well, then we left that, and we drove down to the vintage stock, the
on
local
Metcalf.
Vintage stock on Metcalf Avenue, who was doing a Doctor Who day.
Which took my picture in
so
front
did,
of the
when did you guys find this out? Did you guys
know before we went down?
We
knew before,
Nobody bothered to tell me?
I thought you knew.
Nope.
It was on the Casey fan
no
Casey
clue.
Page.
I had no idea. It wasn't until the tweeted picture came out that I went,
I thought you knew. I'm sorry.
Well, that would have been nice to
I would have mentioned that, yeah.
I'd have come and just met you guys there.
It was cool.
By the time I'd have left, that would have been about the time you guys would have got over there.
Yeah.
So. They did. They had a TARDIS. I'm pretty sure it was the same TARDIS.
It was.
It is.
From,
it has the same rubber band.
Yeah. Yes.
In order to keep you from going inside.
Which they took my picture by.
Could have got my solo picture with the TARDIS that I didn't get when we were at Planet Comic-Con.
That's true.
I had to drove an hour
just
to spend
for
the
that.
Gas just to drive.
And the discounts. Sarah and I...
20% off all Who merchandise.
Well, almost all. The DVDs were 10.
Okay, well, 20% off all Doctor Who
toys.
Still,
10% off the DVDs, too.
Sarah and I had seen before... We got last year's 2011... Or 2012, 13-month, or however long, calendar that was... It's pretty cool. It was the wedding for the August, and it was very cool. We saw this year's, or next year's, not impressive.
Wait, the wedding was in August on the calendar you got last year? Wow.
Yeah, Amy and Rory's. Yeah.
Oh, darn.
But so.
Serendipity.
We saw 2013's and thought, all right, yeah, saw that at Barnes & Noble. Not cool.
Oh.
It's like promotional shots of the Santana.
Oh, I saw it too.
You find a calendar that's phenomenal, and you're like, oh, this is the best calendar ever.
And
you
it's
immediately
Who.
Resolve, I will buy this again next year because this one is so good.
And it's
the
just
next year comes
of
out
course
and
I'll
it
get
sucks
it.
Yeah.
Every single time.
But then, at the,
I'm sorry.
At the vintage stock, we found the 50th anniversary calendar, which each month is a silhouette head of the Doctor. With images inside the head.
It's
so
very cool.
We ended up getting
with
that.
With the exception of the last month.
Yes, which is the TARDIS with images of the Doctor.
Yeah.
Which is, it's such a cool calendar. Google this, the 50th anniversary calendar.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
We got it at a discounted price for a reason we'll explain in a little bit, but I would have paid full price for it regardless. That's how cool this thing is.
Well, we're talking about the calendar. Why can't you talk about that now?
Okay.
Get it discounted?
They had trivia contests.
Oh.
Which you would get $5 gift cards if you got up to five questions correct.
Okay.
Sarah did it on her own easy.
Well, this was the
got
thing.
Got five questions.
We walked
perfect
up to the thing, and it's like, we're going to get the trivia. And Sarah loved the charge on that. She says, what is about this trivia contest?
I'm she ready was
for
all
this.
About
she
the
was,
free swag.
She went up. And I'm thinking to myself, what do you get for that? And they had easy, medium, hard,
and
super
hard.
And Sarah went up and said, okay, give me the thing. And she answered her questions, and she did easy, right?
Yeah, she did easy. She only missed one, which was Name of Rose's Mom, and she just blanked. Mm. But the first five questions... Or
I
the
blanked
first,
there for a minute, too.
The first six questions he asked her, she got, aside from the one, obviously, that she skipped. So she got the gift card.
So yeah, so then he says, all right, here you go. And he plops down a $5 gift card for five trivia questions. It's like, are you kidding me? Bring it on. So he looks
question
at me and he says, you want to do this? And I'm like, yeah. But I didn't feel right doing it on easy.
Oh, no. I was debating between going medium and hard.
So I said, all right, just out of curiosity, let's do super hard. And
so
he kind of looked at
so
me
we did
and
it
said,
as a
ready?
Group.
He says, well, you can do it as a group if you want. I was like, I'll probably need to rely on
you
it.
You did super hard?
I did super hard.
Super hard.
Whew. Wow.
I think he gave us gift cards just for trying.
he gave us gift cards because I went above and beyond on the doctor's questions.
What were some of the questions?
The one that I don't think belonged in Super Hard was name all actors who played the Doctor in order.
Oh, that's easy.
So Sean went above and beyond with Richard Herndl and his Curse of Fatal Death and everything.
Scream of the Shock. I included all of
them. Richard E. Grant twice.
Because some of these questions were like, what was the name of the department store Rose worked at?
Yeah, I can see the name of it in my head. That was the one that I felt I had like the closest ability to answer.
Another one, which he plopped down a gift card for you just for trying, was name the planet the Slovene come from.
That's
but pronounce it properly.
Yeah.
I can't do it.
Yeah, properly is the hard part. Rex.
I almost had it. I was still missing a syllable.
And that's when he threw down one for him.
Raxophalicoribus something or
another. Raxophalia something or
that.
I don't remember that.
What was another one? Those were the three major ones that I was like, oh, man.
What was the name of that one chick's granddaughter?
Oh, yeah.
Which was kind of an easy one.
Forehead slap. It was, what was...
I can't think of her name now.
I can't either. Fob Watch episode?
Oh, you're talking about Verity is the granddaughter.
Verity is the granddaughter. What was her name?
But yeah, it was the answer was Verity. But
Verity. So I got that right.
Verity Newman.
But it was name blah blah blah's granddaughter. And we knew who she was. We just couldn't think of her name.
It's Jennifer. I can't remember her last name.
The girl from space.
Yeah, Jennifer. I can't remember her last
name. But that wasn't her character's name. Jennifer was.
It was Verity, yeah.
No, I meant the...
Oh, they wanted the grandmother's name.
They gave us the grandmother's name. Oh, they wanted the granddaughter's name.
Yeah, no, that was... wow, that one...
Like I said, once I heard it, I was like, oh, yeah, I knew that. But then it was just...
That was the forehead slap of
There were a lot of these questions. If this had been a Star Trek trivia quiz, it would have been, what was the name of the security guard that died in episode 37? I mean, they were that level of insane questions. It was like, really? Super hard.
And if it would
have
been...
But it was all new who, I tell
you. It was all new who. Aside from the 11 dogs.
One of Sarah's questions was, what was the name of the robotic dog that traveled with the doctor for a time? So, yes, but technically it's a new who question.
New and
but it's
old.
A,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And the ironic thing is... If it weren't that question about Verity, if it would have been of, what's the name of the kid from the Dalek two-parter who played the kid in the Dalek two-parter in Manhattan, it would have been Andrew Jackson, and we would have gotten it no problem. And
Andrew Jackson?
Or Johnson. Yeah.
What was the...
Wait a minute. The kid in the Dalek two-parter was Andrew Garfield.
Garfield, yes. Sorry.
I was going, wait a minute.
I had it in my head, and then it went away.
It was a president.
Solomon. I don't know. One of the questions was, there are four members of the Cult of Skaro.
Yeah.
Name them.
Dalek Khan.
Yeah.
Dalek. Hang on. They'll come. Hang on.
Yeah, I thought they would, too.
Oh, I hate being on the spot with things. That's why I'm never any
that's,
good at
that's
things.
That's the thing with the trivia.
Wait, I can remember Dalek Khan and Dalek Fay. There's also Dalek Sek.
They're coming to me as you say them.
And then...
I can't remember
the last one. But he was naming it. I was like, okay, Sek, I remember. And then he named the last one. I was like, nah, I wouldn't. It was like Larry.
He must not have lasted very long.
It was like Dalek Larry. I wouldn't have gotten it. And Keith's going to Google it.
I'm Googling it right now.
Hold on. Anyway, we got inspired. It was a wonderful thing to do. And they had other people.
Jazzed.
Yeah. There were other people that were coming up and kind of listening in. And they asked, I heard somebody else get asked the doctor question. He kind of threw up his hands and says, I don't know, man. It's like, really? How can you not know that one?
Which, and some of Sarah's were really easy that she had no problem with, like River Song's catchphrase.
Hello, sweetie.
Yeah.
There's spoilers. They would have taken either answer.
Yeah. And I heard some of those be asked some of the other people, and some of them didn't know it.
But we got to remember, though, Kansas City Time Lords is still a young group.
Well, and so. I don't know how much of the Kansas City Time Lords actually showed up, and these were just Doctor Who fans.
These are just Doctor Who fans. Okay. This might have just been people in vintage Doctor Who. You're going to give me money? Yeah, I'll play this game. What show are we talking about?
there was a... Looking at the pictures, there were some dressed up. None of them were dressed up when we were there. A lot of them were geeking out about everything, all the Doctor Who stuff, which was fantastic to see.
Yeah. It was really cool to see the responses. I'll be honest, this sounds bad. I don't mean to diminish ConX at all when I say this. But being in that environment and being that it was so Who-centric and seeing everybody else get really excited about something simple... Like, Doctor Who merchandise was on sale, and they had stuff there that you would not have found everywhere, that they had specifically ordered in for the stuff.
They had the soundtrack. They had the David Tennant box set.
The box sets. They had, the Build Your Own Sonics and, you know, some of the mini figs and that kind of stuff.
The 11 Doctors action figure box. They had some old books, which...
Was the 11 Doctors box set, was that more than $100?
I think it was 120.
Yeah.
But a kid walked out of there with the TARDIS interior playset.
Oh, really?
They pulled that off the shelf and sold that.
$60 toy?
So even, you know...
Something like that,
You figure even if they were you know, marking all the merchandise down 20% and then handing out $5 gift cards left and right, you figure they still had to have a great day.
Oh, sure. Yeah. And who knows what else people picked up while they were in there, too.
Yeah.
I mean...
But being in that environment, being that kind, just seeing the joy everybody was getting off of this, and Keith was just, I mean, he was being inundated for pictures, and can you stand with me next to the TARDIS? And I told him afterwards, like, man, we should have had a sign around your neck, $5 pictures with the doctor, we could have paid for the whole trip.
Yeah.
But I was almost excited about Doctor Who Day at Vintage Talk as I was about ConX.
Yeah.
By the time we were done with it, it was just that kind
of
cool.
Afterwards, it was the highlight of the day.
I wish I'd have known about it. I would have had an extra effort to come.
And some of the old books they had were pretty impressive, like the early years. I don't know when, I didn't look at the published date, but it was only about Hartnell's era.
Oh, you're talking the big oversized
one. Big oversized, they had the Key to Time book that you have somewhere. A celebration, which I think you have. And I saw a couple of people with, I couldn't find any of the other ones, but there were Target novelizations there too.
Yeah.
Oh, were there really? I didn't see any.
I saw somebody with two, and then I didn't see any other ones. So I'm assuming they got sold before.
Yeah. And they had the same, you know, plush Dalek talking and
shirts and posters and action figures.
It was a cool day. So
I was spending too much money.
Yeah, it was
an easy to do,
especially coming off of the con and then walking into that, going, oh.
So something we skipped on the con might have been one of your purchases.
Oh yeah, we did skip that.
So
we should talk about that.
The first vendor we walked up to, which is the one that had the very good representation of Who's stuff, we're standing there, we're looking at the stuff, and they've got a lot of really cool things. That's where Mel bought the shot glasses. And I see ships. Now, I'm a sucker for ship models. I don't like building models, though. Modeling me, no, not happening. I'm all thumbs,
well,
not mechanically inclined.
They had two different kinds. They had the build-your-own model and then the pre-built.
And then they had this pre-built one, which it's more of a display piece, you know. But they had several of them, and apparently it's a license that Paramount got, because they had When Worlds Collide, which was the rocket ship from the movie, mm-hmm. which was cool, but it's like that. They had the NSCA Protector from Galaxy Quest, and wow, is that a really cool-looking model. And I kind of drooled on it for a little bit. But sitting next to it, they had one of the flying ships from the 1950s movie War of the Worlds. The not tripod, the one with the, you know, snake head on the front of it. And I was like, can I see that? And they handed it over, and it's polished bronze and, you know, cool looking. And I just looked at it, was like, and I gave it back. I was like, I wasn't going to do it. It's $40. I'm not going to do it. How many of those do you have? And, of course, what is the dealer going to say? That's the only one I've got. It's the last one in five counties. You're never going to see another one like that again. And the guy looks at me and says, I've got two of them. I've got another one over here. Oh. Okay, well, I shouldn't do this, but I'm going to think about it, and I'm going to come back. And he says, yeah, okay, whatever. Because they hear that all the time. I'll think about it, right?
Sure,
so we went and we got our autographs, and we got stuff taken care of and came back. And Mel was getting a photo with Cliff Simon and the SG-1 guys.
All three of them.
All three of the SG-1 boys. Well, the photo booth was next to that booth. And I tried really hard not to go back into that corner of the con, because I've seen the ballroom, I'm done. But that's where that thing's at, and I don't want to go back over there. So we're standing right next to it, and I'm looking at him, and Mel's standing there, and I walked back over to the booth, and I said, can I see that again? And so they held it up. It's like, oh, damn it. So I bought it. I could not pass it.
It is really cool.
I'm trying to save money because we're going to go.
It's decoration for next month, though.
Well, yeah, because every October we do War of the Worlds, so it'll be a very cool centerpiece. But I'm trying to save money because we're going to go see my brother in Maui for Christmas. So I'm really trying to pinch pennies and be good about this. And this was money I didn't need to spend, but then I thought about it. I was like, yeah, I needed to spend it because I'm such a War of the Worlds nut. I had to have this.
Exactly. I've never seen that model before.
I've never seen it before. If I'd seen it before, I'd owned it before now.
Yeah.
So it's a very impressive open. And it just, the box art on the inside, it looks like demolished LA is burning it on fire. And so it's got a really cool little display set up with it. And it just kind of, the way it sits on its pedestal, it kind of hovers. We'll get a picture of it and I'll put it on the website. But it's, I didn't regret it afterwards. And I told Nick about it. I was like, they've got the Protector over there. And apparently he went over later and he says, so, word on the street is you've got the Protector over here. And the woman started laughing. She goes, word on the street is right. Can I see it? So he was looking at it. I don't know if he wound up buying it or not. But then the guy asked me, he says, so I've got two of these. He says, do you want to check out the other one and see, you know, which one's better? And I said, well, they're the same, right? He goes, well, I just meant, you know, box condition and everything. And I kind of laughed. I said, dude, I'm not an NFRB. I'm going to rip this thing open in the car on the way home. So, you know.
You would have if you weren't driving.
If I wasn't driving, I would have been playing with it in the car. It would have been like, whoa, 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 you know. My only qualm with it is it doesn't light up. if it lit up it, and the green on the front and the death ray, it would be the Zacto perfect knife, model.
LEDs.
Believe me, I'm tempted. If, again, that
goes, light up.
That goes back into the model building aspect.
We, not an MIB guy.
We watched A Town Called Mercy together with Blake. And he was hinting so much because Blake does models and everything and mods, Nerf guns, and all this sorts of things. He was hitting so heavy. If I knew somebody who would be able to do this, I would pay them for it.
If only I knew someone that would do this. And Blake's oblivious. It's like, never mind. So, yeah, it was cool, though. But we had a good weekend. And then it was Doctor Who.
Yeah.
And we even ate...
We ate BD's.
We ate at BD's. My first experience to BD's. Have you ever eaten there?
No.
It's Who Hots with higher quality.
Right. And I've always heard that. We almost ate there for...
Yeah. We did almost eat there.
Until
Sarah and Sean's birthday.
That's right.
Until the three-hour wait or whatever it was that we were going to have to endure.
Yep.
So, yeah, definitely...
It's a lot easier with getting in and out of there when you go at, four in the afternoon or something.
Well, and there's only... four of you, as opposed to
20 or however many we had. So, but it was a good weekend. So,
did you do anything today?
Recouped. We had Katrina all weekend, and she was being kind of a fuss bucket.
Mm.
But I think partly that's my fault. We did something. I ran over. Today was the last day for it. We ran over to the Mulvane Art Museum on campus, and they had this exhibit on the life and art of Charles M. Schulz.
Oh, it was the last day
for
that?
And today was the last day for it. It was kind of one of those things I kept meaning. I really want to go see that. I'm just kind of curious. And finally I realized, oh, wait, that's today. So we ducked out and went over there. And it was a good exhibit. It wasn't as good as, like, the Art of the Robot or the Lego one that they've had. But it was fun. If you're a Peanuts fan, it was pretty cool. If it comes near, go check it out. Oh, you didn't know about that either?
I didn't know about that either.
You're in the news, aren't you, Glenn?
I'll tell you, the Mulvane Art Museum does not advertise well enough. The only reason they did the Lego thing is because it was such a draw. I mean, yeah. I don't know. Anyway.
I'll start keeping you guys in.
Like crazy.
I'll keep you guys in the loop from now on.
Yeah.
So, since I'm on campus, I'll whatever the next thing is. Of course, the next one doesn't look like it's going to be any good. But
yeah.
They did have a bow tie exhibit. It was about a year and a half back. They had the art of the bow tie, and it was all.
I did get my
bow ties everywhere.
Postcard for Videotopia down in Wichita, starting in 2 weeks.
Oh yeah, the video game one.
Yeah, we're going down for that.
Oh, that's right. That's the one at the Exploration Center.
Where we saw the Star Wars.
Thing. Yeah. Okay, yeah,
that's the next one that comes in, and it's all about 80s and 90s.
Oh, I want to go to that.
Yeah, I know.
It's awesome. So.
All right. Anyway, let's move on. We're a lot of time here. So,
feedback. We've got some feedback. Or, in honor of our Western themed show, it's the last chance for feedback, and I don't know the song, so I'm going to make it up as we go, and you'll just have to sing along.
Should we let them in on our plan that we had? Okay. First up, Jake.
Jake.
Hey, guys. I recently found the podcast, and I'm really enjoying it. I started the podcast from the beginning last week, and I am already on episode 40. My job is really boring. Keep up the great job.
Jake, I'm very sorry.
Achievements unlocked.
You're almost there. I'm sorry that your job is that boring that we're entertaining you at work, but thank you for listening.
And great to hear from a new listener.
Yeah, absolutely.
Next up, Phil. Odd Duck Phil, that is.
Odd Turducken Phil writes, "Hey, who peekins? Am I supposed to read this?
Yeah,
you kind of gave me the nod.
Okay. We didn't assign these.
Hey, Hoopeekins. I'd like to first send a special thank you out to Sean. Thanks to your mentioning of the This Is Why You're Broke website.
Hey, I mentioned that.
Just to clarify. Just to credit where credit's due.
You can thank me.
You did it, and then I posted it on the website because you didn't.
Did you post it?
I posted a link.
Because, I had forgotten about it until just a couple of days ago, and I went, oh, yeah, that was one of those.
Okay, so credit to
the show notes.
I was given 5 helpings of The Look from Mrs. Odd Duck. I told her I wasn't even thinking of buying anything. I just thought a lot of it was cool.
And a lot of it is cool.
I was thinking of buying a lot of it, but it's nothing I can afford. Well, some things I can afford. And I remember seeing Munster go home, but blanked on the makeup. When I went back and looked at stills, Grandpa and Lily's skin tone seemed to shift from green, although not as green as Herman, to pale or white, to even a slight shade of blue. Not sure what was going on there. Did they miss a memo about official color tone? Well, it's all pointless. Why watch the Munsters when the Addams Family is far superior? And Doctor Who!
I didn't remember their shades shifting in that. Was it that just in that movie or over the course of the movies?
I bet it's over the course of the movies.
I'll be honest. I have blocked so much of Munster Go Home. I remember it being bad.
I can't believe they're remaking it.
I remember not being in the series.
They're remaking the Munster Go Home?
The Munsters.
Yeah.
As a series.
Well, they've already done that once.
They had a remake of the
Munsters in the early 90s.
They're remaking it as a hour-long drama.
Did you know this?
The only thing that gives this hope is it's Brian Fuller.
Whoa. They're remaking Munsters as an hour-long drama?
Yes.
But it's Brian Fuller.
But it's Brian Fuller.
Who's Brian Fuller?
Pushing Daisies, Dead Like Me, Wonder Falls.
What network?
I don't know yet. I don't remember.
I'm sure it'll get canceled early. But
yeah, if it's Fox,
I don't
remember. It'll definitely get canceled.
I think it's ABC.
It would make sense. That's where Pushing Daisies was.
It's not going to make it. All right.
It's not going to make it. And the other, Brian Fuller, Jerry O'Connell.
Yeah, Jerry O'Connell's playing Herman Munster.
Oh, but dead in the water.
Eddie Izzard is Grandpa.
It's still dead.
It's dead in the water, up and down. Yeah.
Of drama, though.
I don't know.
On to Doctor Who. A Who Western.
Oh, he says, and...
Well, he already read that part.
Doctor Who.
I didn't hear you.
A Who Western. That's kind of hard to say. Like Glenn, I love Westerns. I was actually a little surprised, though. I was sure this was going to go more spaghetti Western with a Morricone-esque soundtrack. The High Noon 310 to Yuma feel was a pleasant surprise, though. And Matt Smith had a bit of Gary Cooper in a few scenes. I also enjoyed how nothing was what it seemed. This could have been as simple as Doctor Who fights Cyborg in the Old West, and it would have been a fun romp. But every turn of the story changed our perception of what was really going on. Number 2, Isaac. Great character, brilliant performance. I'd heard Ben Browder before on an Old West episode of Justice League Unlimited. He was Batlash. And given both performances, I can't believe he hasn't been in more Western-themed shows or movies. You could, I suppose, throw Farscape into that mix as a sci-fi Western, because it kind of has that odd feel.
It's not as Western as Firefly. From what I understand of Farscape, I haven't seen it, but his character on Farscape was a big fan of Westerns.
He's a bit of a space cowboy, but I mean, no more so than a lot of other event character. And
Han Solo.
Yeah, Han Solo, or what was the space cowboy's name in Battle Beyond the Stars? Yeah, Battle Beyond the Stars.
I don't know.
Spike Spiegel.
It was Cowboy. Hannibal Smith. Tell us his name.
George Peppard.
George Peppard. Played the Cowboy. You don't remember that?
I don't remember that one.
Oh.
I don't know if I've seen that one.
You haven't seen Battle Beyond the Stars? Was it Battle Beyond the Stars? Roger Corman film.
Roger Corman. That's the one that James Cameron was the art director on.
It's based on The Seven Samurai. I mean, it's the same story again, regurgitated, but in space this time. Yeah. You haven't seen that?
I haven't seen that.
Oh, dig that up, man.
Yeah,
that was one of my favorite films as a kid.
Okay.
I bet
Robert, no, not Robert Culp. The Man from U.N.C.L.E. Was also on.
Yeah, Robert Culp, wasn't it?
No. Robert Culp was in... I Spy and...
Oh, you're right. Who was the man from U.N.C.L.E.?
Not the British guy.
Wait, wasn't that a British show?
What's his name? Oh, this is terrible. I should know all these things. Anyway, he was in it. I want to say John Boy from...
The Waltons?
The Waltons was in it. Yeah. Oh, look it up, man.
Battle Beyond the Stars.
Look it up. I think that's what it's called. Battle Beyond the Stars. Yeah.
We'll have to see if that's the
one
you're
thinking
of.
It's a Roger Corman film. Yeah. Oh, God. Such a good movie. Not really a good movie, but a guilty pleasure.
Just a guilty pleasure. Yeah. Well, it's a Roger Corman. That's your
first. Right, exactly. Right. Yeah.
But, you know.
Yeah, but it's a better Roger Corman film.
So. Well, but I love Death Race. And,
yeah, Death
you know,
Race. Yeah.
So, that quality, you know. Number 3, Dr. Dark. Watching the Doctor drag Jex to the boundary and toss him followed by the gun-toting American Isaac arguing to spare his life. I felt like I'd stepped into Bizarro World for a second there. It was exciting to watch the Doctor face a crisis of morality and question whether his ethics killed more people than it ever saved. And I get the feeling that this little theme isn't going away just yet. All right, I think it's that for me. If you'll excuse me, I'll have to go back to pacing while I wait for Borderlands 2 to be released.
I'm excited for that.
You ditto.
Yeah.
Have a good one, guys. Phil the Auductivus, a.k.a. the Canard of Carnage, Wanted Dead and Alive, 50 Cent Bounty for Train of Thought Derailment and Tangenting Without a License.
Thanks, Phil.
Alex, we need wanted posters of our feedbackers now.
Yeah, there you go.
Next up is Brenda.
Is that me?
That's you.
All right. Brenda writes, Dear Vortex Gang, I have a gang now. It's new. I really enjoyed hearing you read my feedback last week and welcome me so warmly to the podcast gang. I think I may make it a habit to write you guys from time to time, starting with this bit of feedback on the last two episodes, as well as some additional ramblings. First, the ramblings. You mentioned some awards last week that referred to CYMRU and wondered what those initials stood for.
I'm going to say it's Cymru.
Cymru is actually the Welsh word for whales.
Which we got a tweet earlier in the week.
A tweet from somebody, too, that said it.
Who laughed maniacally at our fumbling through the Welsh language.
Yeah, we were trying to make it a...
it's an acronym.
Acronym.
It is now.
Having visited Wales a few times, I can attest to the fact that most words aren't pronounced as they look, and this one is no different. There is an online pronunciation dictionary where you can hear it pronounced by a native, but basically it's... Cymru, spoken with a British accent.
Cymru.
No. I'm sure that's what it is, but none of us did it. And on another pronunciation note, the surname Davies in the UK is generally pronounced the same as Davis here in the States. So Russell T. Davis pronounces his name Davis. I noticed that when we were listening. Sometimes we'll say Davies. Sometimes we'll say Davis. Most of the times we say Davies, yeah. So Russell T.
I've
Davis.
I always thought it was Davies.
So have I.
It's Davis. Russell T. Davis.
You guys
Davis.
Me
Russell
astray.
T. Davis. Sorry, I am a stickler for pronunciations. Hey, keep them in. Coming, Brenda. We want to be corrected when we're wrong. That's certainly true.
Yeah, how come none of the rest of you have written in as long as we've been doing 90 episodes in and we just now find this out?
Russell T. Davis.
The Russell T. Davis archive is wrong.
She goes on and writes, I share Dr. Phil's love of music and am actually a professional musician myself, both a singer and a pianist/organist. Last week, during a choral rehearsal, some of us were remarking how difficult the music of British composer Herbert Howells is to sing. Hope I pronounced that right. We have always joked that the notes rearrange themselves on the page whenever we close the music so that it looks... like something we have never seen before when we next open the music and try to sing it. There are a few Who fans in the ranks of the choir, and we suddenly realized that it's like the Weeping Angels. The notes move when you're not looking at them. So now,
that's how I feel about my French homework. So wait a minute, was that accent on that E or not?
So now we have taken to calling the music Weeping Angel music. We all thought we were very clever when we came up with that, though there was perhaps only a dozen people who might ever find that funny. Still, we amused the heck out of ourselves.
I'm sure Dr. Phil, if he's not lying in a ditch somewhere, is laughing at the joke. And we think it's funny, so.
Yes.
On another musical note, I happen to love opera, but as a listener and a singer who has performed in quite a few of them, I once worked for the Atlanta Opera's education department and did many lectures and school presentations to help people learn about our upcoming productions. I think my exposure to the ridiculously complicated plots of many operas has helped me immensely to suspend disbelief in my approach to science fiction. Really, I can believe just about anything, so I just sit back and enjoy the ride, even when the plots get totally convoluted.
That's a special skill.
Now for a few tidbits about dinosaurs on a spaceship and a town called Mercy. Rory mentions to his dad that he's 31, so he doesn't have a Christmas list anymore. If he's 31, that means Army? That means Amy is as well, since she seems slightly older than Rory in the Let's Kill Hitler childhood scenes. That's true.
That's true.
I always assumed they were in their 20s when they first started traveling with a doctor. So this means that a lot more time has passed than I originally thought. That's a good point.
Yeah, you're right.
And they keep marking time.
Well, and she makes a comment.
It had almost been a year by the time.
She makes a comment at the end of Mercy how their friends are going to start notice that they're aging faster than them. Because what's happening is he's taking them from a certain point and dropping them off near to that same point.
But not
in their
time
stream, or in our time stream, I suppose. But they may have, you know, traveled for 2 years and then they've aged 2 more years.
So. Yeah.
Interesting stuff.
Which is an interesting reasoning for going back home for a while.
Yeah,
that makes a lot more sense to me, too, because I've been concerned. I mentioned this to Phil, to, not Odd Duck Phil, but the new Phil, which eventually we're going to tell his story.
We have a new Phil.
You know,
new
as Phil. I've said before, if the box lands, screw all you guys. I'm out of here. I am going traveling with the doctor, and there is not going to be any. I think I need to go spend a few months at home. I'm just going to be gone because I wouldn't come back. But it makes sense that if you travel for 9 months or a couple of years, and then
I've had that thought several times.
That almost makes a lot more sense now.
The companions would leave. And if they got dropped back close to their normal time, they look so much older.
Yeah.
Because how long have they traveled with the doctor? How long have we seen them age on the show?
Right.
It wouldn't look the same to some of the people.
That's true.
I've always thought that, so I think it's great that they addressed it.
Yeah. It's a very good point, Brenda.
I love the two dueling robots and felt they were like bookend C-3POs, whining and complaining and just a bit inept. And when the doctors shorted them out, they started singing Daisy, Daisy, just like Al from 2001.
Which, I did a little research after we recorded last week. This is a comedy duo from England that did their voices.
That, yeah. Is that right?
Yeah.
Cool. When Brian threw the golf ball to the Triceratops moving, they had to be the bounciest balls ever made. They just kept going and going.
Well, maybe the gravity was slightly lighter on the spaceship.
They were made by Energizer.
When Rory and Brian are piloting the ship, they reminded me of Jim Lovell and Fred Hayes. When Jim Lovell and Fred Hayes were doing the double pilot burn on the way home in Apollo 13. I'm also a space geek, having followed every mission from Mercury to Gemini to Apollo. See, it pays to be old. I was around when history was made. I love the scene at the end with Brian sitting on the TARDIS porch, sandwich and coffee in hand, staring at the Earth. It very much reminded me of Wilf sitting on his hill, thermos in hand, staring at the stars. Yeah, you said that Brian reminded you of Wilf last week.
Of Wilf feel.
I missed A Town Called Mercy last night because I was performing in a concert, so I'm catching up on it tonight and having been singing all day as well. I usually watch each episode at least 3 or 4 times. Wow. So I still have some watching to do in the days ahead, but I did find it interesting that this is the second time that we have someone looking for the doctor who turns out to be someone other than the doctor. Last week, Solomon wanted a doctor to fix him, but didn't know who the doctor was. And the cyborg was looking for an alien doctor, but not the doctor. He really is sliding under the radar these days. That's true.
Yeah.
I was beginning to think for that episode, until she brought this up, that there wasn't a under-the-radar reference. And now that she put it in that context...
The whole thing was.
It was. Yeah, it really was. I didn't think about that when watching it.
We also had our third reference to Christmas in as many episodes. I was bringing that up tonight, too.
Yep.
Is Moffat dropping hints, or am I reading too much into this? No, I think you're right on par there, Brenda, because I thought the same thing tonight.
I think it's two-part. I think he's dropping hints, and I think he's just that big of a fan of Christmas.
Well, Sean had said something last week about the two Christmas hints we had gotten so far.
Yes.
And then you said, and then there was that one in, I thought you said last season, where he says, this, has somebody been looking at my Christmas list? And I thought, I didn't really sink in until later, and I thought, no, that was in the preview, but what was that? What
that was
the episode was
yeah,
that from?
I realized it when he said
trailer.
It.
And then he said it, and I went, oh, it was this episode that
yeah,
they
that's
were
what I was thinking
from.
Of.
So, yeah, there's three in a row. So
yeah.
Interesting.
Which was a great line anyways.
It was a great line.
And the episode that we got previous to these three was a Christmas episode.
Okay. Thank you, Sean.
Thanks, Sean.
And the episode that we'll get after these?
Yes. Well, that's why I think...
Three episodes away from now is a Christmas episode.
I think because of the three dropped hints...
Two, then three. Yeah.
I think because of the three Christmas dropped hints, or the three Christmas lines, we're leading up to the Christmas special that is in the midpoint of this season.
Right.
So.
You think we'll get one next week and the week after?
Oh, yeah. I hope so. If not, we're all wrong.
Which
this is our bad wolf.
Yeah.
Love the narrator at the beginning and end of the episode. She sounded a lot like the narrator from To Kill a Mockingbird.
Hmm.
I've seen that a couple of times, but I didn't think of that.
I didn't either.
I cracked up at the I speak horse. Really. I can bring this gag in every week, and I don't think I'll get tired of it. I would agree.
His name is Susan, and he wants you to respect his life choices.
Lastly, I love the homage.
Homage.
To Martin Luther King Jr. when the doctor said, "Violence doesn't end violence, it extends it." One of my favorite MLK quotes is in my signature in my emails. The ultimate weakness of violence is that it is a descending spiral begetting the very thing it seeks to destroy. Returning violence for violence multiplies violence, adding deeper darkness to a night already devoid of stars. Darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that. And speaking of love, I love you guys and the fun you bring to my week. Keep up the great work. Brenda in Atlanta.
Aww,
thank you, Brenda.
Thanks, Brenda. It's great to hear from you
again.
It's
fun to hear from you.
We love you, too.
Keep writing in. Lastly.
No.
What?
There's two more.
Two more? Wait.
Yep.
I am out of order.
There's three more.
Three?
Three? Uh-huh.
No, there's four more.
What?
There's one from Holly, which we'll read next.
Holly says...
Then there is one from Sean.
Oh.
And there's one from Glenn. And there's one from Chrissy. We'll explain that when we get to Chrissy's.
Hey, guys.
This is Holly. Holly from Wisconsin.
Not Glenn's Holly.
Or Holly Mac. Who had a birthday last night? Sorry.
Why does everybody have five names?
Over a week ago.
Not Glenn's Holly, Holly Mac, Holly from Wisconsin,
and not,
Odd Duck Phil,
not
Odd Turducken.
Turducken Holly from Wisconsin.
Yeah, not Odd Turducken Holly.
Hey, guys. The Gunfighters. I really love this story. I first heard... This is an audio CD. Oh, God, I would think the music would be even worse. It had all the dialogue from the story with linking narration. When I finally got to see it on DVD, it didn't disappoint. I liked how the Last Chance Saloon song was used. I was giggling when Dodo and Steven came out of the TARDIS in their Old West gear. Brought back a few memories of the scene from Back to the Future 3 when Marty's getting ready to go back in time. The doctor going to visit Doc Holliday to have his tooth taken care of was quite the interesting scene. The doctor, maybe you should have taken Steve up on his taking some pain medicine that the TARDIS had. Plus, all the confusion between the names, between the others in town as to who the real Doc Holliday was. Now we know at least one reason why the doctor doesn't like being called Doc. This story is most definitely going on my to-buy list. That's high praise.
That's very high praise. I enjoyed it.
Especially for a Hartnell story.
Oh, now that's just mean.
There's a lot of Hartnell stories that are hard to get through.
Oh, that's just mean.
Yeah. Whatever.
You're such a novice.
No Aztecs, but well, go on.
How many of the hard... If you weren't a collector, how many would you be like, yes, that's one I must own?
I'll be honest, I don't know, because there's so many that I haven't seen yet.
Well,
but
there's that.
I would must own...
Daleks.
Dalek.
The Daleks.
The Daleks, pardon me. I would must own an unearthly child.
The Aztecs.
The Aztecs. The
Time Meddler.
Time Meddler.
I would... I'm not disappointed at all that I own Guns
and Gun Fighters.
The Gun Fighters.
Isn't there... There's, another, there's a couple other we viewed that...
I think Dalek Invasion Earth is really, really good. I don't have a problem owning that at all.
Okay.
I'm looking forward to
it. I haven't
Space
been disappointed
Museum
with
Chase.
Really any of
yeah,
the
Yeah, I mean, really, no.
There, I haven't been disappointed with them, but there aren't ones... There are ones that I wouldn't go back
no,
and rewatch.
I'll tell you, I would definitely go back and rewatch them. They're not ones that I can watch over and over again like some of them.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking of.
You're talking to two completists that are going to own them no matter what.
And,
but... On the flip side of that, yeah, I mean, there are very few Hartnells that I would say, with the exception of the Aztecs and the Gunfighters, that I would say I would go back and watch over and over again.
Yeah.
I would watch the Time Meddler.
Time Meddler I would
over
watch
and
over
again because it was enjoyable, but I still wouldn't put that in the same category as, like, Seeds of Death. Seeds of...
Doom?
Doom.
Doom!
Which one's Baker? Death?
See,
Seeds of Doom is Baker. Seeds of Death is Troughton.
Yes.
Seeds of Doom I could watch over and 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 over again and be fine.
And those, as a not completist, although I'm sure I will eventually be one, the more classic I got.
You had a Doctor Who wedding, for crying out loud.
I know, but...
Who gets introduced to Doctor Who in one year, gets married in the next year, and is, like, totally invested in Doctor Who?
Well, but
you've taken your first step into a larger world.
In my order of collecting things, there are some that would be fine, cheap. Okay, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Well, and I'm
we're
glad
talk
I have
about,
it. But,
we're
okay.
going to talk about the Good Fighters.
A Time and Call of Mercy, great story. Get to see a little bit of the darker side of Eleven and some of the some of his frustrations.
You get to see a lot of the darker side of Eleven.
Amy calling the Doctor out that he's been traveling alone by himself too long is right. But the Doctor can also see the writing on the wall, as well as when Amy asks him to drop both her and Rory off at home and come back to pick them up in a couple of months. The ending with Kaler Jex and the Gunslinger had just the right amount of emotion running through it. The Gunslinger wanting to self-destruct himself because there's nothing left for him to do, and the Doctor coming up with the idea of him taking over for him as Sheriff was good. Going to wrap it up here. Looking forward to your thoughts on this episode. Holly from Wisconsin.
Thank you, Holly.
Thank you, Holly.
Our last bit of feedback comes from Sean, Glenn, and Chrissy.
Because Chrissy sent him feedback, she tweeted me. I said, hey, we haven't seen feedback, and she resent it.
So what happened was we freaked out and said, oh, there must be something wrong with the site. So we went through the various checklists that we do, which was checking the site to make sure it was up, and going through and making sure that it didn't get dumped into some junk mail. And then Sean and I decided, well, maybe one thing we should check is see if the feedback link from the site is actually working. So we sent our own piece of feedback. So I think they both said testing.
I suppose we ought to apologize to Brenda as well, because
we
went through the steps and sent email from our own website and realized, you're right, when you send feedback in, nothing happens. It just kind of goes blank.
It's blank.
It doesn't say thank you, your feedback is submitted, or nothing. So we'll get on our IT guy and we'll get that
changed.
So
for now, if you send feedback through our site and the page goes blank after you sent it, success.
Yes, I guess. Although for Chrissy.
We'll figure it out if we can get it. Well,
she tweeted me saying she sent it through the
Chrissy,
website.
It's Chrissy, though. She might have. No, I'm just kidding.
Regardless, she sent it in differently.
Chris is a librarian. I'm over here on this side of the table. He's over there. She will come after you with her books.
So her subject line is, hopefully this one doesn't get eaten again.
Nom, nom, nom.
Only by Sean.
I'm hungry.
Apparently.
Oh, you're motioning to me.
I'm motioning to you because I just read hallways.
I follow along now.
I'm in the kitchen.
And you're in the kitchen making an awful lot of noise. What are you doing in there?
He's making noise, as much noise as he can.
Now that you're trying to make noise, you're making a lot less noise.
Yeah.
Chrissy writes, "Dear Vortex Boys, having never been..." Okay, you can stop that anytime now. "Having never been to an NFL game, I enjoyed hearing Sean's misadventures in buying a Chiefs hat." That was nothing compared to the misadventures the Chiefs had on Sunday, Chrissy.
Yeah. Did they win this week? Oh, Lord. I'll take that look as a no.
I didn't even watch.
Shouldn't your answer automatically be no?
I didn't watch, but I understand it was a shellacking. Maybe Keith will look up the score for us while we do this. But I will.
That means I got to Google sports.
I know. It's a foreign subject for
How
you.
How do I do this?
Go get it, Sheldon. "I will gladly enjoy the games from the comfort of my sofa. As your resident fact checker, I have to let you know that CYRMU is actually Welsh."
did they play the... the Chiefs...
They paid the bills today.
17-35.
Where's my Price is Right horn?
And that was not it.
That wasn't
anyway.
It.
Anyway.
That was way too happy.
That was way too happy.
Chiefs are almost a little more deserving of a
That's the one you're looking for. That's not the...
Oh, the Price is Right. Well, you were there. You had the... You were... Yeah. No, you didn't do it.
Chrissy says,
"Don't ask me how to pronounce it either, but it's actually Welsh for Wales. Maybe some Welsh Vortex listeners
could
clue
us in about
it." This is how you pronounce
it. Cymru.
Cymru.
So those BAFTA awards you mentioned last week are actually the Welsh division of the BAFTA awards. That makes so much more sense now.
Yes, it does.
Because BAFTA is an acronym, right?
Yeah, I'm going to screw it up, but it's British Academy of Film and Television Awards.
I would believe so.
So
or Academy, maybe. No, British Academy.
I don't think what Academy would repeat.
So a BAFTA award
is a British
award.
Yeah, see, that's why I'm not clear on the A.
It could be a redundancy.
It's like an ATM machine.
But it's British Academy of Film and Television something. Award.
It's got to be.
A BAFTA. You don't
say
a BAFTA award. You say,
yeah.
Actually, the name of the award is the Orangeman.
Really?
Yeah.
How come you knew that? She didn't know Welsh.
I don't know. Now, don't ask me why it's called an Orangeman.
Is it orange?
I'm assuming that's who the statue is named, modeled after, or who started it.
John Orangeman? No, I don't think so.
Did he go to Syracuse? Hey,
wait,
a second.
Yeah,
sports
which
reference
that's,
for you.
That's
the,
yeah.
The BAFTA in Syracuse. General, or the BAFTA Cymru?
How do I pronounce it again?
I just got rid of it.
I had to pull up the dictionary version of it and just play.
Here we go. Ready?
Yeah. You should.
It's Cymru.
Cymru. So BAFTA Cymru is the Welsh awards. I caught up on your side trips. Sounds like Keith and Sarah had a good honeymoon.
We did.
And I thoroughly enjoyed Sean's Star Trek 101. When I get time, I want to go through and tackle those episodes you mentioned as a must-see for a Trek newbie. Hey, that rhymed. I've seen a few episodes of the original series when my dad's watched it on reruns. I'm not sure which ones I've seen. Arts.
British
Arts.
Academy of Film and Television Arts.
That makes
Award.
Sense.
Award. So it's a BAFTA.
Yes, a BAFTA.
Which not sure which ones I've seen specifically, but it'll be cool if it turns out they're the ones you've recommended. I don't think it'd be cool at all, Chrissy, because then you wouldn't have anything to watch.
I think it'd be even cooler if it weren't the ones you recommended. That would expand your knowledge.
But there would be a little bit of serendipity there.
There would be.
A little bit.
Means your dad has good taste.
And you might not remember the original when he watched it on reruns.
Yeah. A big welcome to Brenda. It was great to hear such a unique perspective on sci-fi and how you came to it. I hope we get to hear from you more.
Which
we did this week. And reviews. The Gunfighters. I liked this story. Even with the song, they kept playing over and over again. I used to watch old John Wayne westerns with my dad when I was a kid. Still do if they're on when I go back to visit. And it reminded me a lot of those stories. I enjoyed the atmosphere and the characters. Not much to say about it other than I enjoyed it. A Town Called Mercy. I'm going to go ahead and say it. This is the best episode of Series 7 thus far.
Oh, no.
It was very well written. The plot felt tightly woven together. I never felt bored by it at all. The pacing was very good, and I always wanted to know what was going to happen next. And as far as the Doctor throwing Keller Jex out of Mercy at the point of a gun, somehow I don't feel like that was over the top or out of character. I think with the way the story was structured and how things fit together and how the actors performed it, that scene worked well for the story. Contrast that with the Doctor seemingly randomly blowing up Solomon's ship in Dinosaurs on a Spaceship. Yeah, that came out of nowhere. Anyway, A Town Called Mercy was a fantastic story, one that I would put on par with The Girl Who Waited from last year. Mm. And what's more, we have a boy named Sue. Well, really a boy horse named Susan, but it still works. Take care, Chrissy.
So we saw the return of Susan.
Time Lord reincarnation. She came back as a he. And a horse.
And a horse.
As always, thank you for writing in, Chrissy. And if you have feedback at home and you've not written us, you can reach us through our website, travelingthevortex.com, and click on the Contact Us page and type up your email, and then the screen will go blank. Or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter or Google Voice number. Or
which is on the Contact Us page.
All of that. It's on the Contact
Us
page.
Send us feedback to feedback@travelingthevortex.com.
Yep, that'll work, too.
That'll work, too.
Well, let's move on to the Gunfighters.
The Gunfighters.
So fill up your glasses and join in the song. The law's right behind you, and it won't take long. So come on, you coyotes, and howl at the moon till there's blood on the sawdust in the Last Chance Saloon. I sound a little bit like Steven doing it.
I was going to say, yeah. It's not quite Kate.
It's not quite there, right. Yeah.
If I had the cadence, I would do the entire synopses this way, but see,
I don't think I'm in the right cadence.
I don't think you are either.
That's the happy bouncy version that they do when they're singing it in the bar, but as it goes through the thing, it's that
it gets
ballady tone.
Like, I explained this earlier.
Arizona,
every time I wanted
1881, the air is filled with the sounds of shooting, cussing, and toe tapping tunes.
Not that. Does it really say that on the back of that?
It really does.
For a minute, I thought it was going to rhyme. I was going, wait a minute, maybe they did do this to the ballad.
Knocked out on the battered piano of the at the Last Chance Saloon. If I could have gotten there.
Just get going.
And then there's something less familiar. The wheezing, groaning sound of a police box materializing. The Doctor and his companions aren't the only newcomers in town. The Clanton brothers have ridden in to settle a grudge with Doc Holliday, the notorious gambler, drinker, and dentist.
It's not fair. He was a dentist. That's true.
It's true.
He was a notorious dentist.
Yeah, he's notorious for being a dentist. In the Wild West, tempers are short, guns are swift, and a moment's hesitation on the draw can mean death.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yay! I'm glad you liked
this,
like this,
Sean. I like
this one. Right. Yes.
Where this falls...
Keeps going first.
Where this falls down for me is my lack of knowledge of Westerns and the time period.
Here's the
of
point.
Doc Holliday, of Wider. I just don't have enough knowledge to appreciate
you've seen Tombstone, right?
Well, it's Lynn's been a long time, though.
The Tombstone isn't even totally accurate. It's the,
no,
it's,
it is.
No,
too.
No, yeah, it's not. No, it's not. It's more accurate than this is. But
it's a lot more accurate.
Yeah, but it's got some discrepancies.
But even
as well.
Still.
This is written by somebody over in England that is writing about the American West the way I would write about something that happened in British history. I remember reading that somewhere.
First of all,
I don't have Tombstone burned in my memory of what happens.
Here's the problem. I come from this as a fan of American Western films and television shows. I come at this as a fan of outlaws. I love history about outlaws, the American Old West.
This is the guy who went on vacation and went to visit.
I did. I went to Billy the Kid's tomb.
Yes. So, yeah.
Or as a grave.
As someone who, I don't know about you guys, I'm assuming you grew up with some sci-fi.
Yeah.
But I grew up with almost all sci-fi horror.
That's all I watched as a kid.
I wasn't exposed to any Westerns.
My father was a huge fan of Westerns, and I would sit on Saturday afternoons and watch Westerns.
My uncle was a huge fan of Westerns and John Wayne, but I never watched any of them with him. So I don't have that exposure to Westerns.
That's why I should say. You're one of the people that felt this is actually considered the first BBC produced Western on British television. This is considered the first British Western to air on British television, or be produced for British television.
I guess in 1966.
They weren't doing it over there. It was one of those things that was done in the United States. We had shows like Bonanza, Have Gun Will Travel, the Virginian, The Rifleman,
Ponderosa, that was on the Bonanza.
What was
the Bonanza on the Move?
Bonanza on
Wagon
the
Train.
Move. Wagon Train. Yeah. Well, Gunsmoke.
Gunsmoke. Yeah. That's the one.
We had all those.
Maverick.
Yeah. So we had all of those shows. Those were Westerns. So this was their attempt to capitalize on that. Now, unfortunately, this also holds the record, or at one time holds the record for the lowest appreciation value, audience appreciation numbers. Now, some people get this wrong. They say, a lot of people say this was the lowest rated Doctor Who. It's not true. It had the lowest audience appreciation.
Okay, so explain numbers and appreciation.
Numbers is eyes in front of television.
Yes.
Appreciation is how well they liked it.
Oh, okay.
So there's a difference.
Fair enough.
It was not very well liked, especially I think the last episode gets the lowest rating. However,
which is interesting, because I think if you'll ask anybody that attended our Friday Night Who,
the last episode was like, okay, we're getting somewhere.
Well, and everybody mentioned, and I mentioned this too, is like, when you get to the gunfight, you know, and then we finally get to the shootout at the OK Corral, it was like,
well, it's not very Doctor Who.
There's hardly any Doctor or companions in
But it's also, it's a fairly massive gunfight.
Oh, yeah,
It reaches Hollywood epic proportions of nobody reloading for an hour. Yeah. I mean, it's just on and on and on.
Dodo really is the only of our trio, or of our time trio there, is the only one that really gets involved in that fight. Yeah. And
so
kind of bumbles her way through that anyway.
So really my confession is the
I don't have to confess to anything. I mean, I totally understand where you're coming from.
The biggest knowledge I have of Western films, the Western I've seen the most, is Blazing Saddles.
Oh, boy. Anyway.
On our next podcast, Traveling the Western Frontier.
Here's where a person like you benefits. If you have no knowledge in the shootout at the OK Corral, then this, as far as you know, this won't happen.
I know
I'll
enough
put
that
it
this
right
isn't
out there.
What happens.
Not even Tombstone is that accurate.
Yes, it is. Tombstone's a perfect movie.
First of all, the shootout at the OK Corral is one of the least documented events in American history, American Old West history.
So really nobody knows what truly happened.
Unfortunately,
happens.
There were newspapers at the time that they were likely to take sides. So there might have been a newspaper writer that wrote for the side of the Earp Boys, and there might have been a side that was writing for the what they were called. They were the Cowboys.
Okay,
the
I'll give you that.
Which from what
the
I remember,
version of Tombstone however, as presented is presented from Wyatt Earp's standpoint.
If you go back through the history books and you look, the first recorded story isn't until about 20 years after the fight.
Oh, really?
Even if you go back and look at newspaper articles, there's like one little blurb about this shootout at the OK Corral. The shootout only took 30 seconds. That's it. It was done. Well, 30 seconds. So Tombstone's even too long. I'll go into the inaccuracies of this. First of all, it was not the Clanton brothers.
Oh, really?
It was the McClary brothers.
The McClarys.
Oh.
There was a Clanton there, but it was two McClarys and one Clanton.
Mm.
And Ike was a McClary, which was the father. You've already got a problem there. Johnny Ringo was not even at the battle, was not even at the shootout.
Honestly, when this started seeming familiar was when Wyatt's brother died.
Well,
I was like,
here's the other problem.
I remember that from Tombstone.
Warren wasn't even in Tombstone at the time.
Oh.
Morgan, the other brother, was there at the time and was the one that was mortally wounded.
But not at the OK, wasn't that later?
Yeah, he wasn't mortally wounded.
He was wounded at the OK
and then killed later. Yes,
uh-huh.
Which Tombstone does get
right. Right.
And in the actual gunfight, There's another thing that Tombstone is incorrect, is the only person that was not wounded in the entire battle was Wyatt Earp. Virgil sustained injuries, which he does in Tombstone. I almost said
Morgan.
Morgan sustains injuries, which he does in Tombstone. But also Doc Holliday took a bullet as well. Not a bad, wasn't anything. None of them were life-threatening at that point. But they all had injuries. Wyatt was the only one that was unscathed in that entire battle. And again, it only took 30 seconds.
Because he's immortal.
And the two Clanton brothers, or I take that back. There were three Clanton brothers at the fight, but before it broke out, two of the Clanton brothers ran off.
Yeah.
Oh. They ran away, so.
I like the actress
that got to play everyone.
That we know way more about the OK Corral than we do about
there are three
Welsh
Hollywood
awards.
There are three Hollywood movies and one television show that I've seen that have My Darling Clementine was the first movie made in Hollywood about the shootout at the OK Corral. Then there was the gunfight at the OK Corral, which was a movie. And then Tombstone. And then Wyatt Earp actually abbreviates what happened
the
to
movie.
The OK Corral. But yeah, the movie with Kevin Costner.
Yes. Here's the thing. You can watch the Kevin Costner movie. But here's the deal. Watch Wyatt Earp up until they get to Tombstone. And then turn it off and put in Tombstone.
Yeah,
really.
Absolutely. I would agree. Bat Masterson, not even near Tombstone.
Not
ever.
Near Tombstone.
He was. He served in Dodge City as a sheriff. He was a deputy sheriff at the time that Wyatt was in Dodge City. Wyatt served as deputy sheriffs in Dodge City before Wyatt became marshal in Dodge City, and then Bat Masterson became sheriff later in Dodge City.
You want to know the best version of the OK Corral fight? It's the one in that Star Trek episode.
I forgot about that.
Where Spock mind melds everybody and makes them think that they're invincible to these bullets. They don't get killed. You have
right,
to see
I will
it
stop,
to understand
I will,
it.
I will stop American history now on this.
Quite honestly, that episode of Star Trek makes less sense than this episode. It's that bad. It's bad.
I thought the actor who played Doc Holliday was really well done. I mean...
He was no
compared to
Val Kilmer.
No.
Well, that was another thing.
Sean's
if we're going to point
this
things
entire
out,
thing,
Val Kilmer was actually more of the age of Doc Holliday at this time.
Yeah.
This guy was a little too old to be playing
Which,
Doc
he was good, though.
The two, the Doc Holliday and the Doctor almost seemed, actor-wise, same age.
No, I would say
maybe the Doctor
was probably
older.
In his late 50s, early 60s at this time. I'd say this actor was probably in his late 40s.
Here's a fun one for you, though. Doc Holliday, the actor you're talking about, is Anthony Jacobs. His son, Matthew, visited the set during the production of The Gunfighters.
Wrote Doctor Who the movie.
30 years later, he wrote the script for Doctor
really?
Who the movie.
Nice.
So there's a tie-in for you.
I like the guy who played Wyatt. I thought,
he
did
a
good job.
Great portrayal of Wyatt.
And he was no Kurt Russell.
Even the guy that played Bat Masterson, I thought, did a great job.
He's not in that
movie. He is in Wyatt Earp, though.
He is in Wyatt Earp.
And we got my first exposure to Dodo.
Yeah.
I'm not impressed.
This isn't a fair...
Stephen was great. I like Stephen in this story. And then... Dodo had some good moments when he
this
was off
This is not a fair intro
Doc.
To Dodo,
no,
quite
it's
honestly.
Not. It really
and
is.
And I debated whether or not I wanted to put it on the schedule, but in order to keep the Western theme for tonight,
right.
it
just totally
it,
made
it,
sense.
It had to. So you got thrown.
You'll
into
get
the
some better
Dodo.
A little bit.
I can see the potential in her.
He's really studying the back of his body. He's trying to pull things out.
I'm trying to find things I liked about it.
You know,
I've got all the peas, Glenn, here.
Then there was a song, which I enjoyed it.
Okay.
And then it kept going.
I've got to ask you about that. Yeah, go ahead.
And then it kept going. And then it kept going. By episode 3, I was tired of the song. I liked the idea of changing out the transition music, the incidental music for this to make it Western. I love that idea. I just wish they would have varied it up.
Westerns in the 1950s.
And then there was a point where it was like, oh, they slowed it down. It's going to be different. Nope.
Westerns in the 1950s and 60s used this trope. They did that, the very ballad-ish telling the story through song as we were going along. However,
I appreciated
what Doctor
that.
Who it, does wrong here is it overplays it.
It does.
It does it way
too much.
It's
almost like they had written the song and then customized the episode around it, because it felt like there were breaks in the episode that didn't need to be there,
well,
just so
yes.
they could put in
like
another verse.
Like them carrying, who was it they were carrying? The one Clanton brother into the jail.
Yeah.
Or that was a McCleary. Carrying him into the jail. Carry him slowly. She talks about, she's singing a song about carry him slowly, and it's like, you don't have to. He's not dead. It's not like you're going to break his neck by moving
him. He is dead. You're
Come
not going to break his neck.
No, he wasn't dead.
He wasn't?
No, they carried him into the jail, and he
woke
up
later. Oh, yeah, okay, that's right. Yeah.
He just smacked him over the head. Mary came up behind him, snuck around
that's,
behind.
Yeah. That's right.
Smacked
that's
him
right.
You're thinking of the bartender.
Yeah,
the
one
they bartender was dead.
Yes.
Which they pointed
out
was dead.
Times.
Warren died.
Warren.
Actually, he didn't die right away, though, because he died as they were giving him water or whatever. They were shoving down his throat there, yeah. and he was telling them what had happened. So.
Which, and Sean did the research during Friday Night Who, that this was the first song ever commissioned for Doctor
yeah,
Who.
Yeah, that's right.
The second was only the rap
yeah.
from Greatest Show in the Galaxy.
Show in the... Actually,
so
is...
I came to the conclusion of Doctor Who
well,
should not commission songs.
That is... It wasn't until then, and do you know what the next song commissioned for Doctor Who was beyond that?
What?
If you don't count the rap, it would have been Song for Ten in The Christmas Invasion.
Yeah, Christmas Invasion.
No, that's okay.
Yeah.
Okay, Classic Who should never commission a song.
I like the song. I like the idea of
like
the narrative
it
in the song.
Old.
It makes it feel very Western-y. The entire episode... The BBC did a good job on their first out of making
oh, yeah.
this feel like an authentic television Western.
They did. They really did.
They give it a bit of a cinematic feel. As a Western fan, I appreciate what they did in this episode. I even have a place for this episode with the inaccuracies in the history.
As a non-Western fan, I appreciate what they did with this episode.
I appreciate the fact that they tried the ballad. I think they went a little far with it. The actors, I thought, were phenomenal.
Oh, absolutely.
For British actors, I'm presuming the majority of them are British
yeah.
actors that are taking on... the really the only guy that I thought was really, really bad, he just sounded like he had more of a Boston accent, was I think it was the McCleary guy that was kind of leading the gang. The other
yeah.
two Clantons and the one McCleary. He was okay, but it was just... It was a little too Boston instead of, you know, Western to me, but... I really commend them. I thought that everybody did a good job. I think there's moments in this where it slows down and drags out. I love the doctor in this. Gosh, I love the doctor. I love the confusion that they think that he's the doc, that they think
that
he's Doc
is
Holliday.
Very enjoyable.
I love that.
There's
mistaken
so much of the
identity.
Story that I like.
In a town called Mercy, I so wanted him to make the comment, well, I was once mistaken for Doc Holliday. I wanted that. This is the perfect opportunity.
We haven't
doing a Doctor Who Western in almost 50 years, and we had the opportunity to say, hey, I was once mistaken for Doc Holliday. It didn't happen. It didn't materialize.
I just even wanted when he walked into the saloon... That song to be playing on the piano.
That would have been so awesome. If they
yeah.
walked in and
just
in
a subtle
it.
Nod.
Yeah,
to gun
just,
fire.
No lyrics.
No lyrics.
Just the music
yeah.
playing on the
no,
piano when he walks
perfect.
In and then the music stops.
That
would have been just a few bars of it. Would have been awesome.
Here's the thing. Let me go back and I'll tell you what happened. Is I discovered this on video, not a VHS copy. I mean, not a VHS actual licensed copy. What happened is I used to trade. Star Wars toys and merchandise online. I was part of a group, and what we'd do is if you had something that somebody else was looking for, or you could get a hold of something somebody else was looking for, what you'd do is you would make a trade with somebody that had something you were looking for your collection online. And oftentimes what had happened is you'd trade an action figure for an action figure or a, you know, something comparable, but sometimes you'd branch out and you'd have things that some people didn't have. So I ended up getting a copy of the Justice League of America pilot that never aired on VHS that somebody had recorded from somewhere. It was a pirate. It was a bootleg copy. I can say that. But I didn't buy it. I traded it.
It's been long enough.
And I've never sold it.
I'm pretty sure the Statute of Limitations is
run
out on that.
The Fantastic Four movie that was shelved. I actually have a copy of that.
I did borrow from
you.
You
did.
Oh,
well, the JLA's on there as well.
Oh, I didn't watch
get
the JLA
to that.
One.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I was so put off by the Fantastic Four.
I actually got a bootleg copy
Speaking of
Phantom Menace on VHS before it released in theaters, or before it released on DVD.
On DVD.
Or
VHS, because
the DVD was later. And of that, not of that purchase, but of that era, I actually got a copy of The Gunfighters on VHS that honestly looks like it was recorded off of television. Not in the sense that it was recorded in the 1960s off of television. It was recorded more recently off of television
So it got replayed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And another Doctor Who, which I can't remember. I think it might have been Seeds of Death.
Oh.
The Green Death.
The Green Death with Pertwee.
Oh.
And so when I got that, and I was so excited because this was back around the time that I was rediscovering Doctor Who, and I was borrowing all of Sean's stuff. And I'd gotten this, and I watched it, and I had never seen it before. And I fell in love with it because I was like, wow, this is a Doctor Who. It feels so not Doctor Who. It's just incredible. One of only like maybe five William Hartnell films or stories I'd ever seen. And I went, this is great. I love this. And I watched it several times over and over again throughout the course of like 4 or 5 years until I lost the... I think I still have the VHS copy somewhere. I just don't know where it's at. I think it's in a box in the garage. But I have a box of VHS somewhere in the garage. Unfortunately, it didn't have a good label on it. So I anyway.
One day you're going to pop in
what happened VHS.
It's since been recorded over with, like, you know, Caitlin's birth. He's like, oh, man, I ruined the Gunfighters.
So being a fan of, obviously, classic Westerns and... of outlaws and whatnot, I happened to catch my darling Clementine on AMC one day. And so, I think this was back when AMC was still playing classic movies. And I thought, it was a really good movie. Really good movie.
Back in the day.
Was that when MTV played music videos too?
Yeah, MTV still played music videos. And so I caught that. It was a really good movie. And I thought, you know, I really want to watch that Doctor Who again. And so I actually got online and I had found it online. And somebody had put it... Obviously, mm-hmm. It's not legally up there, but they put it online, so I watched it that way. Well, then come around to the time when we were talking about buying them, and when this came out on DVD just a couple of years ago, maybe not been a couple of years ago, I think it was like a year ago. I think it was the end of last year. Yeah. So I kept thinking, I'm going to buy this. I love this Doctor. I'm going to buy this. And then you bought it. And I thought, well, I can't really run out and buy it now because you have it, so when we review it, we'll have a copy. So, you know, I obviously didn't buy it. So come this Friday, I was going to come to Friday Night Who. I had a tooth extracted on Thursday. I had been on pain medicine all day Thursday and all day Friday.
We made many jokes at your expense during Friday Night Who because you were having a tooth extracted and we're watching the doctor complain about tooth pain.
Which is fantastic. So anyway, so Friday night rolls around and it really pained me to send that message saying that I wasn't going to be here because I just knew I would fall asleep. I was so exhausted, so tired. Knew we were going to ConX the next day, so I thought.
Thursday, you couldn't hear me because of the drugs you were on.
I was in this cloud all day Thursday and all day Friday. So anyway, so I was so bummed. Well, I went to my source of Doctor Who from years ago when I had to resort to online to watch this. Guess what? It's still there. So I watched it over the weekend. Online, I'm not proud of that because you know I like to, and I'll own this someday. But somebody has put this online.
I don't think it'll be long until he owns this.
Oh, it won't be long at all.
But anyway, I feel bad that I robbed you.
This is probably my sixth time of purchasing this.
It's probably a good thing that you purchased this and not Glenn because of the tooth thing. We wouldn't have had the disc. He would have had to run.
True.
He
would have had somebody would have had to come over and get it from me or something.
That's true. But yeah, because I was texting him back and forth about, well, I'm thinking about this one, because Barnes & Noble was running that sale. And, you know, should I get this or this? And he's like, well, if you're going to get that, I'd get this, because that would be the freebie, and then you didn't pay for that one. And it's like, yeah, okay, that's not a bad idea. But the Gunfighters was not one of the ones that I had texted him out, because I kind of already, in the back of my mind, thought that's kind of almost more of a definite. It wasn't on the bubble. It was one that I really thought that I wanted to purchase.
You're wrong, because there was one in there that you texted out and said this, and I'm thinking about the Gunfighters. And I texted back, ooh, that's one of my favorites. I was going to buy that.
Did you really
and then
send
you
that?
And you texted back and said, or this one. And it was in the course of the conversations that I thought, he must not have responded. He didn't read that text or something. I just had that feeling. And it wasn't until you actually said, okay, when I saw you and you said, I got this one, oh, and I picked up the Gunfighters. And I went, I was going to buy the Gunfighters. So, yeah, it was in that course of text.
I'm sorry.
You said Gunfighters. I said I was going to get it, and you just ignored me.
I did. I sniped it out from under you. I'm sorry.
No, I'm just kidding. I will own this. I will buy this. I really, honestly, since this came out on DVD last year, I have been considering buying this all along. And again, now, and that was just it. Watching it again this weekend just rekindled my love for it. And I went, you know, I don't care if this is not accurate or not. Right now, the 10th Doctor never ran the torch up to the light the cauldron in our world. So this is obviously Doctor Who happens in another universe. He hasn't popped in and I haven't seen it. So this is what happened in the Doctor's universe at the battle of the gunfight at the OK Corral. So
maybe it has something to do with Charlie.
We have spent so much less time talking about the actual story than all of the peripheral history,
the DVD
inaccuracies,
release,
the DVD release,
watching it online.
My history with the story. I apologize to listeners if we're boring you with all these other details, but
for a
I can't say anything more about it except for I just have a love for this story.
Well, and it's interesting.
For a Western, not being a fan of Westerns, and Doctor Who.
You keep saying that. We got that, Keith.
I'm just reiterating the fact.
Well, I'm
quantifying my statements. It's enjoyable.
What I think is interesting
is. I'm not a fan of Westerns.
That's
just
it. You're not a fan, but I think it's interesting because you didn't have that. You don't have that connection to them. Whereas Glenn was, you know, watching with your dad. Chrissy was with her dad. Mine was my grandpa. My grandpa was a huge Western nut. And so I kind of came late to the party with the Western thing. I knew of them, but I didn't really start watching them, quite honestly, until probably about Silverado. And then all of a sudden it was like...
And that's a modern Western.
And that's, that's you know, 86. This is a modern-made Western. It was like, where have these been all my life? And from that point on, I kind of started devouring things, and I really enjoy the Western genre. And I would go back and sample old John Wayne's and things like that, but he was really the driving influence. But I think it's interesting because you're the one that you don't have that connection. There wasn't somebody to give you that gateway drug, and so you don't have the appreciation for it that we do, maybe.
To be quite honest, I think Western is probably one of those low-tier genres. Ooh, I think there are people that have an aptitude or a like for Western.
There are some that...
And there are some that don't.
Devour every single John Wayne.
I think us come to it from childhood because we watched them with Dad or we watched them with Grandpa. And so it may have developed. But I think if you just do not have a... If you don't have just that initial like of Westerns, you probably won't ever come to them and enjoy them. Some of the newer ones, I think, bring people to Westerns a little better because they're edgier, they're grittier. They aren't the Roy Rogers Westerns of the 1950s. You know, they're more gritty. They're not the Stephen come out in the...
They're 310 to Yuma.
They're 310 to Yuma,
Of the current, more recent Westerns that I would be more apt to see, I still haven't seen. Like... Cowboys and Aliens. I still haven't seen that.
It's not a Western.
It's a sci-fi Western.
That's as much of a Western as Town Called Mercy. We'll get to that, but that is disappointing.
That's a
way
gateway
too sci-fi
to it. It could be a gateway for some.
As much as Jonah Hex Jonah Hex more
that's
so.
Actually more of a Western. Cowboys and Aliens is a sci-fi movie set in the Old West, which is the problem, if you will, with A Town Called Mercy.
Which I didn't have that problem with A Town Called Mercy. So
it's not enough of the Western tropes that kind of make it a Western. I'll put together a side trip on Westerns. Or you can do it. You're more. Yeah. You should do that.
I could do some side trips on Westerns. And with Westerns, there are, I mean, you've got the cowboy singers Westerns. You've got the Roy Rogers, the Gene Autrys. You've got those type of Westerns.
Yes.
They're what I would consider bubblegum Western. I mean, they're more lighthearted. They're still gunslinging and stuff like that. They're not edgy or dirty or gritty. They're really a
misrepresentation. My mom's cousin loves Gene Autry and stuff like that.
They're a misrepresentation of what the Wild West probably was. But they're
romanticized.
And then you get more of the darker... Westerns that they did in kind of the 50s. You have 310 Yuma, I think, is sort of this way. High Noon is one of those
ones.
Trying to think of some others that would fall in that genre. Then you have the when Sergio, thank you, help me out here, Leon, came along and did what was called the spaghetti westerns. That was really the first delving into the edgy, the gritty, the more realistic Wild West. So you had a lot of the early Clint Eastwood films. Mm-hmm. Some of them, like Joe Kidd and those kind, were still kind of that nice.
They towed the line between back and forth.
Yeah, they towed the line. Hang 'em High, for one example. There'd be another one like High Noon. Hang 'em High would be.
Hang 'em High would be in there. Yeah.
But then when you got the Man with No Name trilogy, when you started getting into the High Plains Drifter, when you started getting into those edgier Western, the Wild Bunch, those kind of things.
Where would you put Magnificent Seven?
Magnificent Seven, I think, is in that High Noon.
It kind of ties
era.
The board. Because there's elements of it that are...
It's more to the High Noon side, I think. But
that's another Seven Samurai.
It is. The Magnificent Seven. It's the first...
I believe so.
It's the first of
retelling
the remakes.
Of the Seven Samurai. So you've got that. And then we got we got some more of... We kind of got into what we call... I would consider... the dramatic Western in the 1980s, which I would consider Silverado, although it's a little more edgier. Young Guns, Young Guns 2, those kind of ones were more dramatic Western. They were still gunslinging. They still showed an edgier side. So you have those Wild Herb, I think, and even Tombstone are more of the dramatic. They're not that dark, gritty edge like the Wild Bunch was or the Man with No Name. So you have these different... I'm doing the side trip here, I shouldn't. But you have these different classifications within the Western genre as well. And so, but I like it from one end of the spectrum to the other. And they're all different, but they are all still in that Western genre.
Yeah.
So that's where actually these two episodes that we're talking about of Doctor Who, like I'm bringing it back, they fit into those.
Throwing up my tangent board.
Each side.
You've got the one that fits in kind of that High Noon range. I would consider this story... On the edge of the Singing Cowboy, but yeah, more in the High Noon range. And then you've got A Town Called Mercy, which, quite frankly, it's hard for me to call it a Western because I'm like Sean, it's a sci-fi set in a Western period. But I would say it's more of that dramatic Western era rather than the gritty, edgy, Sergio Leone, which is what I wanted, what I was looking for, especially based on where it was shot. Anyway, let's finish up Gunfighter so we can move on to the
Regardless... other. My cousin, who's a Doctor Who fan, Frank and Cass, who apparently are listening to the podcast, so hey guys.
Hey guys.
Hey guys.
He grew up with my uncle who watched John Wayne. He would probably love this story as much as you guys do. I mean, it's...
Most of the John Waynes would fit in the High Noon category, with the exception of like the Searchers and Rooster Cogburn. Those are kind of...
The funny thing that I've always thought...
The Doctor is very enjoyable in this story.
True Grit.
It's a continuation of Time Meddler Doctor.
He's much more Time Meddler Doctor in this than...
Which,
early.
I think so
he's,
too,
he's
yes.
so enjoyable. He, aside from any of the Western stuff, is the most enjoyable part of this story. Steven's fairly enjoyable. But the
Steven's
Doctor...
Steven's enjoyable from a light comedic
yes,
sidekick
yeah.
role. Yeah.
Yes. But the Doctor... is in high praise in this story.
That's the fun thing. This is one of those stories that it's just fun. I don't think you can necessarily look at it with too critical of an eye and go, well, they got the names wrong of the OK Corral, and it's not that. And then, I mean, yeah, you could really nitpick and go, okay, so we've got our companions, we split them off, and we've got Dodo off here doing something, we've got Steven off here doing something. There's no interaction between any of them. And so it's just kind of,
really
you're really relying on the Doctor to show back up and kind of carry things along because he was such a magnetic personality in this. But really, that's all nitpicking. The minute you land the TARDIS in Tombstone, it's kind of like, okay, all bets are off.
Yeah.
I mean, we're just going to have to go with whatever, the West brings up and you throw it at it. I thought it was really enjoyable. I'd never seen this one before at all. Ever. Like, I hadn't seen pieces of it or anything. And so I wasn't quite sure what to expect out of it, other than, well, it's a Hartnell historical. Mm-hmm. So there's that kind of mindset that you go into.
Which I'm beginning to discover is fairly frequent.
This is the last true historical.
How many more until he regenerates?
The low appreciation, audience appreciation numbers pretty much put the nail in the coffin on mm-hmm. that. This was the last true historical.
Yeah.
Any historical done beyond that it has a sci-fi element to it. There's no sci-fi element to this, with the exception of the fact that the TARDIS lands in Tombstone, Arizona.
But you know, it's a Hartnell historical. Okay, here we go. And then somebody started singing. It's just like, that's out the window now. So it's just, I agree with you. They used the song too much, but I enjoyed the way that was constructed. I thought that was very clever and nifty. And it took me a couple times before I realized what they were doing with it. It was just that, why are they breaking for this song between acts? Oh, I get it.
It's a narration. Oh, you know, they're breaking for songs between acts.
They're doing the narration. It's a true old school Western in that regard. I was really impressed. I don't know where they shot it, but episode one started with that. We're going to shoot here and here, and that's it. These are the only two locations we've got.
I think it was all done on a soundstage.
We've got Holiday's office, and we've got this. But then they actually went outside and kind of now.
Again, I think it was on a soundstage. Yeah.
It's really an impressive backlot looking soundstage. I mean, because they built a good chunk of that town. Now, again, it's craftily shot to look like there's more of it there than what
I was going to say. But it's really just three shots.
There's three shots. It was really well put together. So I liked that aspect of it. Again, my first, believe it or not, my first introduction to Dodo as well. So, you know, I can't say much for it there.
This would have been my first introduction, although I have seen others since then that we haven't reviewed.
Quite frankly, they're not coming to mind right now.
And Steven was enjoyable. We had a lot of...
My second Steven.
We had a lot of jokes.
That's right.
That it kept throwing me. And I finally broke down and tweeted it because every time they would say Holiday and they would look at Hartnell, I would go, Spain. That was the correlation that I made with it. Holiday, Spain. It's just word association at that point. And then we realized that a town called Mercy was filmed in Spain. And it's like, oh, the second wave. Look at that. There's a lot of stuff going on there. But,
that's right.
You know, for all its inaccuracies and its inconsistencies and things that just aren't right, it doesn't matter to me. This was an enjoyable romp. And I can use the word romp. It was a fun story. It was fun to watch.
It should have been season three.
And I really, really liked Hartnell in it. And I think he is the strongest part of it. Were there things at this point? There were a lot of things that just didn't quite gel. I didn't care. I was just having a fun time. And it's one of those that, you know, is it going to rank up there that I can watch it over and over and over and over again? No. But it didn't detract from my enjoyment of it.
War Machines I've seen. And it's, she actually, I won't say anything. Sorry. So I almost blew something. So
shouldn't put that one on the schedule anytime soon, huh?
Mm. You know, quite frankly, I can't remember. The Savages doesn't exist anymore, which will be the following story. Which, by the way, a little bit of trivia here.
Which
the Gunfighters is the last of the individually named episodes.
Oh.
Once they did Doctor Who and the Savages, as it appears on that next week, beyond that, everything was named based on its story arc, not its episode title.
So episode 1, 2, yep. 3, and 4.
Exactly.
So it took three seasons.
Actually, almost three full seasons because Savages and War Machines were the end of season 3.
Anything else we want to say about this one? I don't know that
I've seen part of Dalek Master Plan, which I think is her first episode. Actually, the end of that is her first episode. Maybe it was Massacre St. Barnabas. St. Barthelmore. I don't remember what I'd seen. Something else I've seen with her. Celestial Tourmaker doesn't exist. Maybe I've seen the existing arc clip from that I think I've seen her in. And then War Machines. Because the Savages doesn't exist either. The Ark. Does that exist?
Here's
I don't
one.
Think I'd seen the Ark, though.
The Ark's out on DVD now.
Okay, well.
I think.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking of. But
here's one of those Who actors that's come back. Johnny Ringo, played by Lawrence Payne.
Right. He was in Leisure Hive.
Hive, and then later played Death Starry in The Two Doctors.
Yeah, and I totally can visualize it now. Okay, absolutely.
So there's that for you.
Very good. Hmm. All right, well, should we talk about A Town Called Mercy?
Yes.
Just a little bit?
A little bit.
Really?
Just a little bit.
Hang on.
Okay.
Who's Linda?
Chrissy mentioned it, and we've talked about it slightly throughout the episode. It gave off very much a Firefly vibe.
Which one? Town Called Mercy?
Yes.
Well, do you want me to read the synopsis that they give for
iTunes? Do you have
iTunes?
One?
I do. We read it last week.
No, we didn't.
Yes, we did.
He read it.
I read it.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
You said, well, we didn't do one for the last one. I can find one.
I said I could. You said don't bother.
I did say don't bother, but... All right. But iTunes has the ones that I assume will end up on the DVDs, so that's why I'm going with that. So, all right. Here we go. Ready? The doctor gets a Stetson and a gun and finds himself the reluctant sheriff of a western town. That's not true. He was a marshal. Sheriff of a western town under siege by a relentless cyborg who goes by the name of the Gunslinger. That's not true. He had a real name, too. But who is he, and what does he want? Well, we know. The answer seems to lie with the mysterious Collar Jax, a alien doctor, yes, another one, whose initial appearance is hiding a dark secret.
Dun, dun, dun.
Oh, that was a little too dun, dun, dun. For
that. A little too much dun, dun, dun?
You weren't that impressed by this one.
You know what? Okay, I'm going to start. This is my, I liked this. I had fun with it. I wanted it to be more western-y. Coming from the Western background, I wanted this to be feel more like a Western. Actually, when they said they were shooting in Spain, from the shots that I had seen, even the comedy that we saw all in the trailer,
yes,
I still wanted this to be a little more edgy than it was. Now, don't get me wrong, it goes a little dark. a little dark, and I'll explain that in a minute as well. But it did. It just, I agree. Who was it that said it seemed a little more High Noon and 310 to Yuma rather than
Phil.
Yeah, rather than that's I thought the same thing. It thought it was a little more of a Western drama than that you know that dirty gritty drama that I want or dirty gritty Western that I wanted.
Yeah,
I think I went into it. That was the problem though, was I went into it with that mindset. And you I shouldn't
in,
have. I
you went into it with expectations.
Exactly, I should not have built up those expectations. So this is my least favorite episode of the season so far. Not to say that it was bad. But it felt more like science fiction set in the West. It didn't really feel like it needed a Western. It didn't. It's almost like it didn't need the old West.
The story absolutely didn't need a West. It could have been any time.
The idea of this doctor
from the doctor curing the cholera.
That's the idea of this doctor coming from somewhere else in the future or in space and actually curing the town of cholera. I like that concept. I like that idea. I like the idea of the doctor being here, the alien doctor being here because, what was his name again?
Jex.
I like Jex being here because he feels like he's atoning for sins that he did somewhere else. I like the idea that he has crash landed and that he's got this cyborg, which is essentially this killing machine that he built that's coming to hunt him down to punish him for his crimes. I like all of the ideas and concepts here. It's just, it felt like the Western theme wasn't necessary for all of that.
I would agree.
Ben
Browder. As Isaac.
Did a great job acting. But when he died 15 minutes into this thing,
I was so disappointed he was killed off so early.
Are you kidding me? We've hyped this up. We've talked about this American actor who was in Farscape on this show. And he was only in the show for 15 minutes.
He was also in Stargate SG-1.
Yes. Are you kidding me? That just blew my mind. Now, the death scene was noble. It was quite.
And getting the doctor to be marshal was pretty cool.
I had a problem with that.
Should have been sheriff, not marshal.
Well, it shouldn't have been either. But I like the fact. I love the fact that this is a reflection of the doctor Jax is. Sort of a mirror of the doctor, and that's where they're going with this, is they're trying to show that these two really aren't any different in the things that they have done.
Yeah.
The doctor, before we're talking about the doctor went really, really dark. Somebody said it in a feedback, and you were agreeing, yeah, this is really, really dark. The doctor wasn't dark to me in this one. I sat there thinking...
You don't think the pulling the gun and cocking
the doctor
it and
was,
it at his head?
That's not dark. That's conflicted. The doctor is conflicted in this.
Okay.
What's happening here is when the doctor goes and he finds out from the ship what Jex really is and who he really is, he brings the information back. You've got Amy, you've got Rory, you've got the sheriff. Can't remember his
Isaac.
Name now. Isaac. You've got Isaac. All sitting there. He comes in. He says, I know who you really are. He starts pouring all this out. So suddenly they're all discussing, what are we going to do with this? The doctor's not involved in that at all. He steps away. well, we could, you know, we could do this, we could do this, blah, blah, blah. Amy is really kind of the one, well, we can't, you know, we have to turn him over. She's really kind of the one that's saying this. And the doctor
she's
says,
the quote,
well, whatever
moral
Amy
compass.
Says. But it's the, Amy said, whatever Amy says, because it was easy for him. He's still trying to figure out what to do here. It's not, he doesn't go to that dark place and make that decision right away. Yeah, that's right, we're going to take him to the outside town. It's not until everybody turns, when Amy turns to him and says, doctor, what should we do? It's when he just realizes, yeah, I have to make a choice here. He marches him out. Now, yeah, he's grumpy, he's angry, he's pushing him, he looks mad. Yes, he is. He's still conflicted. It's not when he gets there to he gets to the edge of town. Yes, there is a bit of a darkness, I'm going to give you that, but it wasn't this dark, dark. Yeah, this was really dark. You guys made it emphasize that it was dark. It was conflict within the doctor. He didn't know what else to do. It wasn't a, I'm determined that this is the right thing, even though it's dark. It was a,
this is
what I'm doing because this is just the choice I'm making. You know, does that make sense?
It wasn't
it was
Waters
conflicted.
Of Mars moment.
No, exactly.
No.
It wasn't even the dark that we saw in the Seventh Doctor in the last season.
And I've heard people try and say, oh, he was like Waters of Mars dark, which
no,
I mean, you can't go there.
Even, no,
it's a
it
different,
wasn't
not.
Even that dark. It
it's
was
a different
conflicted.
Tone.
It was the Doctor with the determination. It was almost the, I've got to try to be gruff and mean about this so that I'm getting my point across so that he does go out there, that I do expel him, that I do throw him. He throws him out to Jared. Again, it's that because he, even after that happens and the cyborg starts coming and Amy says, this is why you can't travel alone. And he starts to realize that it wasn't I wanted it to be a railing him back from the edge of the darkness of pushing him. It wasn't. It was more of the, yeah, you're right. This isn't me. This isn't what I should. You know what I mean?
The whole thing seemed to be a little too pat.
Yes, it was pat. There you go.
He went immediately to the, okay, let's throw him out. And yes, he was grumpy and had a great angry walk as he's just stalking this guy across the town.
Yes.
And hucks him out there. But then he pulls the gun and aims it at him and cocks it. And he's like, you wouldn't.
That's the point where I was like, oh, wow.
But he pulls the gun and he cocks it and he says, you wouldn't. And you know what my first thought was? Yeah, you're right, he won't.
But then the doctor replies.
If I had seen the dark in there, I would have said, yeah, he looks like he's on the edge of doing
it. That's the problem with it. If the doctor replies, right now, I don't know.
And he's
still struggling with it.
That's still the conflict. That's my point. You're right.
You're right. I agree. That's what set it up with this. Okay, so what the heck just happened? There's this moment here where...
still the darkest we've ever seen.
No.
11.
I don't think it's the darkest
we've seen. The darkest we've seen 11 was in the moment when he was going to make that whale brain dead because, again, he didn't have another choice. That was just that moment where humans are crud and I'm going to take care of this and just fix it. So and that was the darkest I have seen the 11th Doctor. I'm sorry.
He's had moments where he's teetered on that and gone back and forth. And he's had dark moments. But not dark from a blacken your soul, you know, kind of dark. But dark in a moody, stormy, not evil. This didn't feel evil, but it changed the persona of who he was.
Dark doesn't have to be evil.
Yeah,
No, absolutely not.
When we say dark, I think we keep wanting to compare it to Waters of Mars.
Yes,
that's a dark doctor.
So.
Because that's the darkest we've seen the doctor.
I would agree with that. Yes, that is the benchmark.
And I don't think it becomes, okay, well, he's like Waters. And it's like, no, there are varying degrees here, and this isn't really anywhere near that yet. Although, the problem is, we've got him acting like that. He's pulled a gun. He's cocked it. He's ready to go off on this guy. What was in those files that was so horrific? Okay, they were experimenting on these people. Okay, I get that. That was bad. They're screaming in agony. Okay, I get that. But it still didn't seem like that was enough to do it. It made me feel...
It seems like there's some adventures we're missing.
Exactly. It made me feel like that there was something that happened before he got with Amy and Rory, and he's still brooding about it, and this was the domino that pushed that over for him to go to that point.
Whatever happens in 5... is before this. Episode 5 takes place in the Doctor's timeline before this. That's what would make him so grumpy.
But again, it doesn't come across that way, though. That's my issue.
I agree.
I think it doesn't come.
I enjoyed the scene.
If that's where we go with it, and that's Keith, the way that they do this, then that scene needed to be a little more dark. It needed to be more impactful.
Perhaps.
I needed to believe that, yeah, he would have shot that guy had he necessarily needed to. It didn't go there for me.
And
maybe
doctor,
because the rest of it seemed so light. Maybe because
maybe,
we kept having
the
light moments throughout it.
Maybe.
And
but regardless, whenever a doctor picks up a gun, I don't believe he's going to shoot anybody.
Yeah. Well, but see, that's just it.
No matter
he
who
has.
The
does.
Yeah. He shot all kinds of Ogrons in the...
We've seen... how many times has Davison picked up a gun?
Yeah. Well, you know, I guess it's more of a... He's not going to shoot a sympathetic person.
But this is also... maybe I'm making a huge misstep here. This is the first time the doctor has picked up a gun. Like a full-blown... All the other ones, they've been ray guns. They've been...
Death rays. They've been
sci-fi guns. This is the first time he's really picked up a gun and pointed it at a person with intent to do bodily harm, I think. And maybe I'm way off, because obviously, I mean, he's had a gun, even Matt Smith's had a gun before, but shot the gravity orb.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but he pulled it on both the Master and
Rathalon.
He kept going back and forth between the two, who to kill.
Yeah,
that was Dark Doctor too. Don't get me wrong.
I don't think he had any intention of ever shooting either one.
Hang on a second. This is just from my perspective, not yours.
Yes.
But watching that scene, and in that moment, I believed he was going to make a choice. I believed he was either going to shoot the Master or he was going to shoot Rassilon. I believed in that moment that was going to happen.
See,
when he pointed the gun at Jax in this,
I didn't believe
he would have done it.
I didn't think he was going to believe.
And maybe it's because of Matt Smith, because of the character that he is. He is the lighter. We have never seen him go that dark. Well, even when I'm, you know, the scene I'm referring to with the whale, space whale, he didn't go that dark, but that was the darkest I'd seen him. So, yeah, Matt Smith has never been to that point.
Which is pretty impressive, because that the story you're referencing is the second story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's they're getting their feet wet, though, with this 11th Doctor. So
it's
easier to go dark early on and then realize this is a lighter character.
When he's swinging back and forth between Rassilon and the Master, I never believed he was going to shoot either one.
I totally thought he was going to do that episode right for you.
Because that's where it needed
there.
To go, yeah.
We've talked dark with Matt Smith. I mean, he's been there. We just maybe haven't seen it. I mean, don't forget, this is the guy that
made comments.
This is a guy that did annihilate the Cybermen fleet.
Yes. Yeah. And I brought that up last week, that he did destroy an entire fleet of Cybermen without batting an eye.
Yeah.
Well, we didn't see him bat an eye.
We're assuming also
he has
that it was
glimmers
the doctor that
of darkness in A Good Man Goes to War, in some of the things that he threatens. Yes. In this one, I didn't even feel he went that far.
It's because it seems so out of character. I have to disagree with Chrissy. I enjoyed this episode immensely. I thought it was good. I thought it was fun. I liked the Western Isles. I liked all that stuff. But this scene in particular, I liked this scene. But set in the context of the rest of the episode, it's too much of an extreme swing one way or the other. And it makes me feel like there should be something more that leads up to this. And that we haven't got it yet. And I want to know why. I want to know what was on that tape that in his mind Jex was this despicable that he could be thrown out and make the doctor go, I'm okay with this. Because his whole speech about today I honor the victims, that doesn't have anything to do with why you're chucking this guy out of town. It just doesn't fit with what's going on.
Well,
it was a great speech, and it was well delivered.
It's like him trying to justify what he's done, but again, he's just conflicted. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm saying that he didn't go dark here and I didn't see it happen. I didn't have to have that, because they justify it back when he decides, no, I do need to protect him, and he protects him from the town, and the confrontation with the kid, the 18-year-old kid, justifies the fact that he didn't go dark, that he's still the doctor that we know and love. So I don't have a problem, but that's my point is everybody keeps talking about the darkness, and I'm pointing fingers at you guys, but everybody's talking about that. I didn't see that. Maybe I wanted to see that in this episode, but he didn't go there, and I didn't feel like I had to. Want the rest of the episode goes, but that's the thing with this is
this episode, with the exception, Chrissy or somebody pointed out the weightiness of the Jex deciding to blow up the spaceship in order to atone for his sins. I didn't even feel the emotion in that. I kept wanting the emotion.
Honestly,
to be
I
there.
Felt
it was
the
more
gunslinger
the,
was gypped because he killed
well,
himself.
Well, agreed, but part of that is this guy's been hiding out in this town. He's been essentially putting all of these people's lives in danger, despite the fact that he saved this town from cholera. They know they can't go anywhere. They've cut off supply. The gunslinger has cut off supplies to this town. They're eventually going to starve to death if they don't turn him over. They're starting to turn on him. They're wanting to throw him out, even though he's the one that has saved them. He's still hiding in this jail cell. And then to suddenly have this change of heart after having this conversation with the doctor. I'm sorry. It seemed cliche. It seemed like this is where
my,
we were going to go with
thought
it.
When
and
he,
I even knew that once the doctor set into the thing, the self-destruct started to go off. He fixed it with the all-powerful sonic screwdriver, which we've got to do that episode soon because it's getting worse and worse. But he does the thing with his all-powerful screwdriver, and sonic screwdriver, and then he sees the images. And as soon as he goes back and he starts confronting Jex, you know what my first thought was? I know where this is going to go. The guy's going to end up committing suicide in there for his sins and the thing. That ruined everything for me because I thought, that's where they're going with this. I knew that was going to happen. I knew the answer was to let him escape. Even when they start, the doctor's conflicted and trying to figure out, he throws him out. And I thought, wow, where are they going to go with this? And then I thought, oh, the doctor's going to have a change. I'm sorry, I just felt telegraphed, guys. That's my problem with this episode.
I could see where
I thought,
coming from
oh
with
gosh,
that.
he's going to let him go. That's the only option he has is to help him escape. He's going to go back. The doctor's going to realize, no, this I can't run from this guy. I really should atone for my sins and blow myself up. It was just that was my problem.
For me, the thought I had when he blew himself up was, oh, he just eliminated the source of power for the town. He introduced electricity to this town. Now that's gone.
I'll be honest. When we got to that point in the story, and okay, we're going to have the gunslinger now be the sheriff and everything. We kind of go back to the happy ending. I really half expected them to have, this was all part of the plan, and that they teleported Jex out of his ship at the last minute, and that they were going to go drop him off somewhere else in another universe. The gunslinger goes on believing that Jex is dead, and Jex can go atone for his sins somewhere else. I really thought that's how they were going to go, in keeping with the other theme that's kind of been running this season of forget, of allowing things to slip out of memory and be undiscovered. I really thought that's how they were going to turn it. And I wasn't sure how I felt about
that's,
that.
That's actually, I mean, I don't like that better, but that's kind of clever.
I loved the twists and turns that they went through this, and he had the comment about it would be so much easier if I was just the mad scientist.
Yeah.
But the problem that I had with that, because I liked the fact that we didn't know how to feel about this guy, except for the fact that I always knew how to feel about this guy. Because when the doctor bursts in the door and confronts him, what's the first thing he says? What are you? I'm a war hero. That's what he default sets to.
Yep.
That I am a hero to the people that I did. I did atrocities, I did unspeakable things, but it was justified, and I won't back down from
you're
that.
You're a war hero, but you're also a war criminal.
Yes, at the same time.
At the same time.
And
you can't be both.
When later he was going, you know, we believe that you carry the souls with us, and Isaac was my friend, and blah, blah, blah. I almost could believe him, but then I went back to his default setting, and it's like, I've seen too much science fiction to believe that you are having this weighty struggle with it. I don't trust you.
Exactly.
And that, I think, is where we fell down. I think we needed a lot more on Jex as a character in order to make this
maybe 40,
balance 45
back and forth. Minutes is not enough to
yeah,
really flesh true. This episode
yeah.
out. Maybe that's the problem.
Well, if we'd had a two-parter, we would have had a lot more Ben Browder.
Yeah, that's true.
Which would have been
maybe he would have lasted a whole episode.
He wouldn't
episode.
Have lasted more than 15 minutes.
But I mean,
well, maybe he would have. If they had to
that's what I'm saying. He would,
out.
He would have lasted more than 15 minutes.
We get, and this is the kind of going back to what you were saying about the westerns. There's enough of the tropes that it works. We
the
get the high noon
reference. Yeah,
we get the kind of the show off or the not
showdown.
Really a gunfight,
showdown.
But a showdown.
Yeah,
they walk into the saloon. and everybody stops. The mm-hmm. piano stops yeah. and everything. And then he walks up, and I half expected him to order a glass of milk, because Hartnell did.
Yeah.
Yes.
And he didn't. He ordered tea, the strongest you've got. Leave the bag in. Okay, that's a
I'm
clever
okay
line.
That, yeah.
I'm okay with that. But it's the, you know...
Opportunities.
Well, a missed opportunity from a Doctor Who tie-in standpoint, but very much in fitting with the... The geek walks into
oh,
the
sure,
Western
sure, sure.
bar
yeah.
and orders,
out of place. Yeah.
You know, something out of place. So we've got that. We've got that. There were so many little things that were like, okay, cool, we're doing the Western, but not once did it feel like they really capitalized
they
on doing a Western.
They didn't commit
it.
To a
it
Western.
It feels yeah. like the things that they were doing were forced cliches. It was like, hey, we could do the High Noon thing here now. Oh, hey, we could do the walk into the saloon thing here now. Oh, we could, instead of doing the, here's an homage to the High Noon thing. Here is an homage to the walk in. It felt forced. It felt like the Western stuff, first of all, took a back seat to everything that was going on. And then it was like almost like they said, oh, yeah, we're doing a Western. We should do something here. Oh, well, we're doing a Western. We should do something here. Yeah. And leaving the other thing was leaving the doctor as the sheriff or the marshal of the town. This did not feel right. It just I expected the doctor to take over. I expected the doctor to become the law enforcement of the town or to make the decisions of what was going to happen. Branding him sheriff or branding him marshal was just a little weird, because then suddenly when he did it, it was like the doctor felt like he had to fit into the book. Even the whole time that William Hartnell, the first doctor, is mistaken for Doc Holliday, is in this town, shoots one of the McClary brothers
on total accident,
the gun out of his hand. Of all of that time, the first doctor never ever took on the persona of a mm-hmm. gunslinger or anybody that belonged in the Wild West. While Stephen and Dodo were trying to fit in, the doctor never put on any airs to try
it's
to
true.
Fit in. Suddenly, when the 11th doctor is given this star, suddenly it's like he's putting the hands in the belt or holding the cuffs of the collar.
He puts the holster on several times.
Puts the holster on, which I thought was it was like he was trying to step into the role of a cowboy. And while I appreciate the fact that the 11th doctor in the past has always done that, you know, when in Rome type thing, it was like here he was bumbling through trying to be a cowboy.
It really showcased how much out of his element
yes.
he was.
Yes, yeah. But in a bad
apparently
way,
this,
not in
this
a good
is,
way.
We've only had two Westerns because this is an era of time that he doesn't come to.
Yeah, exactly.
That's really what
right.
it's called.
Well,
and there's a
agree.
Reason for that.
Yeah.
I would agree.
I think there's a couple of things that fit into that. One, this is Toby Whitehouse, who wrote others.
Fear her.
Oh, don't bring up
no.
Toby.
I don't.
No,
was
he, no,
was that
didn't.
Toby? I don't think that was Toby.
I want to say he wrote God Complex.
He did write God Complex. Yes,
but there was one
School Reunion.
School yes, Reunion
which was
and
Vampires
in
Venice. So now, while this is for me, this is no School Reunion or God Complex, but it's certainly no Vampires of Venice. However. This is coming from the source of all knowledge, Wiki, showrunner Stephen Moffat pitched the Wild West theme to writer Toby Whitehouse, suggesting the episode could be about town terrorized by a robot. Whitehouse noted it was a genre he had not written before, but he absolutely loved the idea of it. Okay, so now we've got a guy that really doesn't know anything about the Wild West writing a Western episode. So I think that's part of the reason why we get the tropes. We get the stereotypical, we're going to do this, and the shootout at High Noon.
That makes sense.
The other part of it, I think, is it could be a problem with the scripting. It could be a problem with the editing. Because the doctor goes out to the spaceship, and he's inundated with this flood of horrible news. And if he had marched right back to town... Cut, next scene is him grabbing Jex and throwing him out. That would have lent a little more, aha,
yeah.
something really bad went down.
But we get the scene with the gunslinger.
Instead, he runs into the gunslinger.
Yeah.
I know who you are, I know
You're
what
right.
happened. And it's almost a little more of a...
Softening the blow.
It's softening
yeah.
the blow. It's tenderizing things a little
yes.
bit. And that just didn't mesh. Follow that up with the scenes of Jex. And... Okay, we're going to throw him out, and he's outside the fence, and Isaac saves him. And then Isaac dies, and the Doctor becomes the Marshal. Would you really deputize or marshalize the guy that just completely disregarded everything you were trying to do and put him in charge of this situation? On your death? I mean, it just...
But things had de-escalated. Let me defend him here. Things had de-escalated at that point because the Doctor is start. That's when Amy has the point where this is what happens when you travel by yourself for too long. All of this stuff. I think Isaac realizes that the Doctor is understanding the mistake of his ways, and because that's that point that the gunslinger starts, you know, warping
right.
from place to
yes.
place.
Which was a cool
and
effect.
And he says, step back,
a very cool
like
effect,
that.
Yeah.
Step back across the line. So he's already showing some compassion again for Jex. Jex.
Because it's not
Isaac
sci-fi
realizes
unless you have
that.
A J and an X.
Yeah. Jonah Hex. Jex. So I think... I think Isaac realizes at that point that the Doctor is coming around to his way of thinking. So I could almost forgive him for deputizing
him. It really felt to me, if I had been sheriff in that instance, I would have needed to have spent a lot more time with the Doctor getting to know
him. Yeah.
Because keep in mind, what happened before that? Oh, we've got this grand plan. We're going to go out and get my ship and come back into town and evacuate everybody. You go out and be the decoy. And he agrees to it. And he goes out and gets shot at.
Easily.
And then comes back and he's like, we didn't see this, but I imagine the conversation went something along the lines of, so where's the ship?
Yeah.
And why are you going to throw the guy out now?
Wait, what did we miss?
Yeah.
Well, now, admittedly, he was holding Amy at gunpoint. But still, that's another thing that made me not like him.
Right.
Because, again, alarm went off.
Jex really wasn't like...
That was the moment in the... That was the OS moment in the episode where you go, uh-oh, you know, that's what it's meant for.
Yeah.
Because he holds the gun on her, and you're thinking, okay...
Well, as you said, it's fight or flight. But that just because that's what
he
defaulted
gets,
to, I don't like him anymore.
Jex gets uneasy when he hears the alarm going off the ship. So he suspects what the Doctor is doing. And if the Doctor uncovers what's happened, you know, his file in the ship, then it's going to be... A change of plans.
Obviously, the Doctor learned horse after the gunfighters.
Yeah.
Because
Hartnell
didn't seem to be able to speak horse.
That was a great bit.
Well, it has been 900 and some years.
Yeah, well. And that was something else that kind of ties in with what Brenda?
She mentioned time, yes.
She mentioned the time. We didn't get the official timestamp of it's been X number of months since we last saw you, but he makes the comment about his age, that he's 2,000 and something now.
Oh, he did?
1,200.
1,200. Yeah, which he was 1,100 in Impossible Astronaut
Beyond
the Moon.
Right.
Yeah, he was 1,100.
So there's, again,
but
100 years between that episode and this episode,
less,
and that's only a season.
They're making reference each episode of how much time has passed.
Yes. Agree.
So we did get that. I'm going to go on record. I enjoyed the credits for the Western theme.
This one
I hate
more.
The Vortex. I don't like the way that they've changed the Vortex to try and soup it up and make it cool.
But it wasn't parchment paper, by the way. It wasn't parchment paper.
I like the wood.
Wooden
texture. I like that. This one of the logo I liked more than the other ones. More than the dinosaur scales, more than the Dalek bumps.
I'm still on the fence. I don't know. I miss the old... Having the TARDIS in the middle of the Doctor Who, which initially when I first saw it I hated, and I thought it was just going to look so weird, and then seeing it for the first time, and it just, the words went away, and the TARDIS flipped around, and it was the TARDIS, just like... This is the logo as it should have been. They should have done this from day one. This makes so much sense. And now we've got Doctor Who in this cool font for the movie episode thing that we've got going on. It's like, okay, that's kind of cool. But then the DW logo shows up.
And then
it flips. And it's almost like it's unnecessary now.
I prefer the DW logo.
Yeah. It's almost like they've taken the TARDIS out of that equation because, we don't really need it, and it's kind of
because we have to
have it fly off into the vortex.
I think they should have left it in and had that
And maybe that would soften my animosity toward it some. I don't know. I feel like we've been really, really down on it. I don't mean to be.
It's an enjoyable episode.
It was fun. And this was the other thing that we both keyed into this when we watched it, was because Jex makes the comment about Amy being a mother. And she says, are you a father? Or are you a parent? And he says, I guess I am of a sort. And then the next scene is the doctor finding the ship. And he pulls the cover off. And we looked at each other and went, is that a giant egg?
Yeah.
I mean, I really thought that's where the... He's a mother.
He's Mark for more.
He's laid an egg out there in the desert. And he's hooked up cables to it to power the town. No, it's just a spaceship. Oh. Okay. I like the fact that we got a Sonic that, you know, well, what's with this, you know, line of sticks and rocks? It's a line of sticks and rocks. I mean, yeah. It doesn't do
nothing
wood.
More than that.
No power readings. That's all I got. But I agree with you that all of a sudden he can get into the system. Now.
We got to do that episode.
It's coming up.
I really liked the way this one was shot.
Because it didn't used to bother me, but it's getting bothersome.
It's getting more and more pronounced, I think, in a lot of ways. Did this?
Although, I'm sorry, he uses it for some more extreme issues, but it's not as frequent as it used to be. He uses it as a reader to tell him what's going on, but he doesn't use it as much to fix things.
Keith, writers use it to further the plot too fast.
That's the problem. But David Tennant uses it to fix issues.
That's true.
In the story, more than Matt Smith does.
But Matt Smith had three separate instances of it in this story alone.
Yep.
He got into the ship with it. He used it to deactivate the thing.
Yep.
And he used it as the sonic blast in the showdown.
Cyborg.
Yeah. Against the cyborg.
Yep.
And that's not counting him waving it over the sticks.
Yep. But I'm sure I can find just as many instances of David Tennant doing the same thing.
I'm
pretty sure I could.
Go ahead. I challenge you.
I will.
You know why? Because David Tennant never went beep. Oh, yeah, that's just what this is. Well, never was a tricorder with David Tennant.
It may not have been a tricorder, but he used it just as frequently.
We're going to talk about this in that episode. I can't wait to get to the visitation.
Saul Metzenstein. I'm not sure I'm mispronouncing your name, Saul. He directed Dinosaurs in a Spaceship, as well as this. These are his first two directing gigs for Doctor Who. But one of the things that I really liked, and maybe this isn't a directing thing so much as it is, again, an editing thing, the very quick cuts of the Doctor, specifically on top of the ship, trying to figure out how to get in, and it's just bam, 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 bam with him, you know, this, that, and the other thing. And then when he's sitting there, and the countdown's going off, and there's a cut at every number, and it's almost like he's been in this thing for 3 days trying to figure out how to get into it instead of 3 seconds. I really liked how that was put together. I thought it was very cool.
That's a directorial thing, I think, a lot of times. The director sits
over. The editors would argue that with you.
Well, no, the director sits over with the editor. It's the editor that makes it clean and smooth and makes it work right. It's usually the director saying, this is what I'm looking for. So, I think it's a joint effort.
I wish they'd done a little bit more of that, actually, because when they did those two scenes so close to each other, I kind of thought we're going to get more of that as the episode progresses, and then we didn't. So I was kind of disappointed, actually.
I would agree with that.
But like I said, I feel like we've been nitpicking it a lot. It's an enjoyable episode. It was really good. I have to agree with you. So far, it's my least favorite of the season, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's a, you know, it's not a Vampires of Venice or a Fear Her. It just happens to be that in my mind it's not quite up to the quality of what I thought the other two were.
That's what it boils down to.
I think it's a little higher than Dinosaurs on a Spaceship, but not as high as Asylum.
No.
Yeah, see, Asylum is still the
what it boils down
cream
for me
of the coffee
is
at this
it's,
point.
It's it, we've started on an absolute high and we've just continued to slide down since. And I'm not putting down this season whatsoever. I have enjoyed all three of these episodes. I just have enjoyed them at higher levels early on, and we've come down. This is an enjoyable story. Another thing that this one suffers from is I came into the last two podcasts having seen the episode two times for each one. This I only saw one time.
I only had a chance
to see this one time. So that's been my issue with this episode. Maybe if I'd seen it twice, I could have given a little higher praise, but. You know, I don't want it to make it sound like I didn't like this episode, because I did. I enjoyed it. I thought, it had some great premises, some great concepts. It falls down in a lot of ways.
I think it had more substance than Dinosaurs on a Spaceship.
I don't think so, too. Dinosaurs was weightier just in the fact that it dealt with the genocide aspect of it. It dealt
I don't think it was forced, because they dropped the one line. Oh, this is a Silurian ship. Just by tacking that on, all of a sudden, you did have that weight to
absolutely.
It. Whereas This, I think, you're dealing with questions of morality and a lot more.
But again, the issue with this was they were trying to deal with issues of morality, but they didn't address it well. Whereas dinosaurs, just adding that one little thing in there...
Except they didn't address it.
...worked well. They did address it.
They mentioned it. They just didn't address it.
There's a dark moment for the doctor where he decides to just sign the death warrant on
And as Chrissy mentions, that he... It seems so out of place... It seems
I think that's where they're trying to go with it. Because of the conflict in this one, it doesn't. If they had gone darker...
But there's the conflict. There's no conflict in the last one.
That's why it's dark and it's so weighty, and I go, wow.
I don't think it's dark because there's no development.
I think the doctor was far more justified in blowing up Solomon.
I would agree. It's something uncharacteristic of the doctor. There's nothing uncharacteristic of the doctor in this one when you watch the whole thing.
Here's the difference, though.
Doctor's been conflicted a lot.
His decision to blow up Solomon comes at the 44, 45-minute mark of a 48-minute episode.
Yes.
His decision to go and throw Jex out of town comes at the 20-minute mark.
15. I made sure. What's-his-name died about 15 minutes into the episode, so I couldn't believe it.
Well, and he was already on his way out at that point, so 14 minutes into the episode. That, to me, is a huge shift in... Like I said, everything that led up to the decision in Dinosaurs justified that decision. Yes. I don't have a problem with
Agreed.
That. Everything that led up to this wasn't enough for me to get over why is he doing this, which is why we're of the opinion that there may be something else going on here. So, again, I'm reserving judgment on it. I'd be curious to know if you watched it a second time. Because I watched it once and I loved it. I really thought it was a lot of fun. And then tonight, watching it again, I started to notice all these things. It's like, you know what? I don't trust Jex. And it's not just because I know what's going to happen. It's because he's not working for me. There's things wrong here. And I started to nitpick a little bit more. So I'd be curious to know if you liked it better on a second viewing or if you came down on it.
I'll let you know.
Did you get to see it a second time?
I didn't.
Oh, you didn't either.
Okay. I plan on watching it again.
Okay. Well, that's your homework on the assignments you have extra homework because you apparently now have to find David Tennant doing Sonic stuff. So
yeah,
that's not going to be hard. I'm sure there's a YouTube video of the Doctor using the Sonic.
Oh, he's used it. Don't get me wrong. Just not... as readily, easily, and a cure-all for everything as Matt Smith's Doctor
I think, especially later in this run, he uses it just as much.
Good luck.
The Sonic does way more than it's supposed to.
Anyway. Yep. Regardless, I agree.
It did, even in David Tennant's time. But it's like 10 times as much
now,
in Matt Smith's
time. Here's my last thought on what is this called? Temple of Mercy. It's been done. Donald Belisario did this all the way back in 1978 in Battlestar Galactica when Apollo crash-landed his Viper in this frontier western-type town, and the sheriff of the town was a Cylon.
Oh, I sort of remember that.
It was Red Eye. We had to go gunfight against Red Eye.
That's right. I forgot about that.
So,
I never saw the original Battlestar.
That's right.
I have it if you'd like to borrow it.
I know you do. one other thing I'd like to mention about this episode, which Dr. Phil would probably appreciate, was...
Oh, yeah.
The music was fantastic.
Murray Gold outdid himself
I think he did such a good job in this music.
Loved the music in this.
It was so good.
You can tell he had more time to work.
Yes, he really did.
And the music, too, I think, is
And the music, more than anything, made it feel like Firefly
got the Firefly feel to it, as it had that.
See, again, though, that's the problem with this, is it's the music, is fantastic. I love the music in this. But it wasn't Western music. It was science fiction music.
It was still fantastic.
It really was. And if they'd had some gal singing some ballad, narrating the whole thing,
it would
have felt more like a Western.
I think it's better that they didn't do that.
And here comes the cyborg. He's going to kill you at noon, but you can have a drink
Again, you're
at the
too
last chance saloon.
Maybe there's a reason they didn't do the Western music and did the sci-fi Western instead.
We're on a time crunch. I'm not saying
they didn't want the low appreciation numbers. I have a feeling the audience appreciation numbers of this one aren't going to be as high as the first two either. Mm-hmm. We'll see.
Well, we'll see. I mean, like you said, BBC doesn't really do a lot, and Doctor Who certainly hasn't done a lot of Westerns, so maybe people will really get into
it. I can count on two fingers, I mean.
Who was it that... I meant to mention it in one of the feedbacks. Somebody brought up... It's going to be gone now. Somebody said something that was in tying in with one of these episodes in their review, and I thought to myself, well, that's just like... the sense of... ethics. The question of ethics and whether or not the Doctor was justified in what he did, because was his ethics killing more people than he was saving? Who said
that? Was that Brenda, where she was talking about JFK?
Maybe.
Possibly.
Might have been. Or MLK.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It wasn't JFK. MLK. JFK. Yeah. It was
Big Finish.
An acronym. That's not even an acronym.
No.
It's not milk.
It's Welsh. It's pronounced Kamischflagen.
Martin Luther King Jr.
Martin Luther King Jr. We get a lot of that in Big Finish in the Paul McGann stories. There's a lot of ethics talk up about I have the right to do this. So
I'm excited to get to it. Yeah. We just got to get there.
we're working our way toward it.
All right, what's next on the schedule, Sean?
Next on the schedule, next week for Friday Night Who, or this week, depending on when you listen to us, on Friday the 21st of September, we're going to do Battlefield with Sylvester McCoy, so a Seventh Doctor story.
Barring any narcotics, I should be here.
Okay. followed by what we think.
Which, following the teaser, almost seems like...
Seems pretty likely.
I'll tell you what, I stepped away and thought a little less of it being a unit story this time.
Yeah, we'll see. Yeah, so did I. But I still thought the possibility was there.
It's intriguing.
The
problem is I didn't see uniform.
But it's not so much the three, the cube.
I really expected
there to be. We saw the blonde gal that I suspect is somebody.
Yeah, no black outfits with the berets. Which, so maybe
they were in the background.
Oh, did you see some?
I saw some in the background, and they were at Amy and Rory's house.
I'll have to watch again.
And Rory in his undies.
Yes.
Oh, no, there were some in there.
Yeah.
There were two guys standing behind him that had berets and the dark clothes behind him in his underwear.
In the hallway.
In his pants, as he called them. Apparently underwear there. Pants.
Pants.
I'm sorry, I was looking at Rory's pants. I didn't see any guys with berets. Anyway, so next week we'll do Battlefield, and then on our show we'll review Battlefield and Power 3.
This will be our first one that we're hoping we linked together correctly. Because all the rest we were pretty certain of.
All the rest of them we've had pretty good...
and Angels Take Manhattan. I think we're pretty safe with that one. But.
Which we won't be reviewing another story with that.
Right. No.
We are watching one that ties in.
Just to go ahead and post for you the following week on the 28th of September, we will be doing Blink for Friday Night Who. Obviously, we've already reviewed Blink, so we won't talk about it too much. But then our following episode, we will do Angels Take Manhattan, and then probably a retrospect of the five episodes we've gotten so far. The Farewell
Most
of
likely
the Ponds,
there's just going
to
be enough
it's been handled.
To talk about.
If the theory that was branded about between that Blake brought up that he found online, which I won't go into here, but if that theory in any way ties into this, it's a really interesting take, so it'll be a fun episode. And then, yes,
I wasn't here then. I wouldn't have wanted to know that.
That was Saturday, not
Saturday.
Friday
night. Yeah. Officially on the schedule, are you listening? October 5th, Peter Davison, The Visitation.
Yay, we got to talk Sonic.
And then our following show, we're going to talk The Visitation, and we're going to discuss the Get Out of Jail Free card. So that's coming up on the schedule.
All right, anything else, guys, that we need to talk about before we get out of here?
I think that's about it.
I want to throw out a quick note to Phil. Who's been
Odd Duck or
neither our new
Phil.
Mainline Phil.
I have a friend Phil who comes with us to over to Sunday night.
He'll
shows
always be aces to me though.
Or aces.
I know him as Two Aces.
We can know him as Two Aces. Yeah. That's his gamer aces handle. And
Aces Phil.
Aces Phil. He came to me one day. This has been about a month now. A month and a week ago.
It was the weekend of your wedding. It was the weekend before your wedding.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he says, "So what's up with this Doctor Who thing?" And I'm like, "Where do you want me to start?" And he's like, "Well, I keep hearing so much about it, and you guys talk about it. You've got the podcast and everything." And he says, I kind of started listening to your podcast, and you were talking about the Christmas special. And then I thought, well, I should stop. I should actually watch some Doctor Who. He had never seen an episode of Doctor Who before. I was like, okay, I'll loan it to you. He says, well, what's a good place to start? And I was like, for you, I'm going to say Rose. We're going to start with Eccleston season one, and we'll go from there. So I give him season one. Literally a day and a half later, It was the next day. Like, I gave it to him in the afternoon, even. It was late morning, early afternoon, 1 o'clock. I get a text that night at, like, 11:30. Okay, I'm on the last disc. What? Mainlined all of season one in a day. Just poured through this thing. Got to the last disc. Okay, I need more. So I had him come over, and we watched the little intro with Barcelona and that fun thing, and then I gave him season two, and then three, and then four.
No. In the middle of that, Keith had a wedding.
Yeah.
Yes. And Aces is at the wedding, and his wife, who I've never met, comes up to the bar and thanks Sean. And Sean's a little, for what? For introducing Phil to Doctor Who. Oh, yeah? What does she say? She says, yeah. He's supposed to be out looking for a job. Instead, he's watching Doctor Who.
Which, and there's a lot at the wedding he wouldn't have gotten. At this point, he'd been introduced to Canine.
I barely know the woman. I've only met her this night. And she's already telling me that her husband is a no good bum because he won't look for a job. Because Sean's got him watching Doctor Who. There was no way I was going to tell her I was in on this podcast at that point. Go ahead.
Do you feel better getting that off your chest now?
Phil, she did not say you were a no-good bum. But no.
Phil, like many of us, Phil has been the victim of the economic downturn.
Yeah.
And
Aces is out of work.
He's got some time to kill, so he's filling his days with Dr. Who now. But
there are worse ways to fill your days.
Oh, no lie. So in very short order, he devoured all of it, and then started listening to the podcast in correlation with it. So he was matching episodes up with watching the real episodes. Nice. And then he gets into Matt Smith, and I'm like, so how's, you know, how did you get everything going? And the first thing out of his mouth, I can't say it on the air, but it was expletive wolf. I'm like, didn't that just break your heart? Yeah. just, so then he gets into the Matt Smith era, and he's watching those. And I, you know, we were all hyped. We're getting ready for Asylum of the Daleks, and he's, I gotta hurry up so I can be there. And he wound up missing it by like a day. He finished season six in the Christmas special, and then jumped in. And I got him a copy of Asylum, so that he could see it. And so now he's caught up, and he's watching it with us on Sunday nights on the BBC, as it were. But he's been listening to the show and everything. And he actually even showed up with us. What's the Friday Night Who about? What do you guys do with that? It's like, we watch episodes.
That was 2 weeks ago.
Right. So 2 weeks ago, he showed up for
Dinosaur Invasion of the
Dinosaurs. Of the Dinosaurs.
Wow.
We introduced another
newbie to a classic Who with dinosaurs.
And he laughed.
Rubber dinosaurs. That's when we introduced Keith with rubber dinosaurs.
The rubber dinosaurs, essentially.
And the dinosaurs and Invasion of the Dinosaurs? Much better than Silurians.
Well, we gave you that dinosaur, and then we turned around and gave you a Merca.
Yeah, that's true. Phil's getting a much better treatment than I did.
depends on your purse.
We're batting 1,000 on old classic Who introductions now. But
surprised they stick around.
So we've been promising to tell that story of Phil for a while. So there it is.
Like 2 weeks, we've hinted about our new Phil.
I had heard he had been introduced, and I was like, I came up to him during the wedding. I'm like, so you get a lot of this now? He's like, yep. And then I come back from holiday, and he's caught up.
Yes. Well, and I asked him, I was like, so, you know, are you enjoying? He's like, it's enjoyable. I don't know that I'd be like you guys with it, because you guys are really into it. There's a lot going on that you guys talk about, and I just kind of shake my head, because I don't think I'm that into it.
There are some people that are even more into it than
I know.
Yes.
And I looked at him, I said, Phil, 14 weeks. He said, what? So Keith had never seen an episode of Doctor Who. 14 weeks later, he cosplayed at the Doctor Who convention. And Phil looked at me and said, never.
Welcome to the fold.
Phil, officially.
All right. I think that's going to do it for this week. Until next week, I'm Glenn.
I am El Presidente. And you'll have to wait until next week to find out why, because we don't have time to talk about it now. But that was something else that happened to me this week.
You are El Presidente. All right. Well, you'll have to introduce yourself as El Presidente this week.
I'm Keith.
Cheers.
Good night, everyone.
Be seeing
you. You have been listening to Traveling the Vortex. Doctor Who and all of its associated programs are owned and trademarked by the BBC. No infringement is intended or implied.